quorum. So we'll call the meeting to order. Okay, before we start on anything, I just want to remind everybody that we have a lot on the agenda tonight. It is my hope, I might be optimistic, but my hope that we'll be able to get through the action items before we need to break at 6 o'clock, because we have a public hearing that was published to begin at 6. So whatever we're doing, we'll stop and switch to the public hearing at 6 o'clock. So just a reminder about that. New commission member introductions. Before I introduce new members, and I think we have another one who's likely on his way. I do want to thank Alder Rebecca Kemble and Steve King for their contributions to the Transportation Commission, and also in particular Rebecca Kemble, who also served on the Special Rules Subcommittee. She did a really great job, had a lot of very helpful information because of her other work on the council and on certain other committees. So wanted to do that. Grant Foster is one of our Alder representatives, and Grant was also appointed to the Transportation Policy and Planning Board. So he's one of our crossover members. So Grant, did you have anything that you wanted to say or no?
Happy to be here.
Yeah. So welcome. You have a great background, and we're looking forward to your feedback on the commission. Just a reminder, we still have two vacancies, and Jessica Pyatt's baby came early, so she's not here. Best excuse in the world for not being here. But so she may miss a few meetings as a result of being a new mom, so it's real important that everybody stay in touch with either Ann or Patrick. Otherwise, we may end up with quorum issues. Did everyone have a chance to look at the minutes?
Move approval.
Second.
There's a motion and a second. Any discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. Okay. First, under new business, F1. Chuck, are you going to handle this?
Do we have public comment?
Oh, I'm sorry. I missed that public comment and disclosures and recusal. Sorry, I was sorting through all my stuff. So we do have someone who has a public comment on something that's not on the agenda. Susan, is it DeVos? Am I saying that correct, Susan? This is 3 minutes, correct. Could somebody maybe move that mic closer to her? There we go. Thank you.
My name is Susan DeVos, and I live at 610 North Pinfield Boulevard. This is to ask for clarification on your and Metro's policy regarding the time necessary between announcing and holding a public hearing. The issue was motivated by someone's suggestion that Metro might have been sneaky in having the Transportation Commission authorize a public hearing on some rather significant service changes roughly 5 weeks before the hearing, and as an amendment to an already posted agenda for the March 13th meeting. It is probably my bad for not seeing the packet of proposals for another couple of weeks, making the effective time for me between learning about the hearing and holding it more on the order of 3 weeks. But that might not be so unusual. In fact, I might have been better informed than most as I ride the bus most weekdays. I phoned the city clerk's office to find out if the city had a standard policy regarding public hearings. I was told that it did not, and that different agencies appear to use different rules for them. I suggest that the commission clearly establish a policy. The engineering department does a very good job in rolling out its transportation improvement plan every year, methodically presenting it to the various transportation oversight bodies for having it formally adopted by the MPO. Something similar could occur with respect to Metro service changes. This body has a work plan for the year, but does not include a review of service change proposals as one of the items. It could. That would make it clear as to how and with what time frame Metro announced public hearings.
Did you have a recommendation on how much time you thought would be helpful for the public to have?
I think 5 weeks is good, myself, but that's assuming I know that, you know, that 5 weeks. Does that make sense to you? I mean, if it's too long, I'm afraid people might just sort of, you know, not have it in their brain anymore by the time it's time for them to say.
Other comments or questions? Okay, and I know when we get to the service changes, there is a whole list of the outreach that was done by Metro.
Yes, I mean,
to the community.
Was a terrific job.
Yes.
I saw the path that it was very nicely constructed.
Okay. All right. Thank you. Appreciate that. Is there any other public comment? And this is for items that is not that are not on the agenda. Okay. Welcome. This is our other new member, Alder Michael Tierney. Welcome to the commission. Looking forward to having your participation and your input and feedback. Any disclosures and recusals from the group? Okay. Now on to new business. Okay. Chuck, did you want to come and speak to the first resolution, F1?
Yes, with some assistance from Nancy Uwe, who is with our technology unit at Metro, to help me. But just a quick overview is that Trapeze now touches all of our key passenger and operations support systems at Metro. It touches our real-time passenger data that's available to people to find out what time their buses are coming. It touches Google Transit so that people know how to schedule their rides. It also internally helps us with our operations supervisors monitoring things on the street and helps us with scheduling of paratransit trips. And much, much more. Nancy is a little bit more familiar a lot more familiar with all of those systems and can answer any detailed questions. But the ongoing maintenance agreements are key for us to be able to get the necessary support and have that maintenance provided in a timely manner. And so we are seeking your support for this item.
Nancy, did you have anything to add?
Yes, just to repeat that, Trapeze is our basic backbone for dispatching, scheduling work for drivers now, yard management, and it's been customized for our extra board rules, so it's very critical and would save our staff a lot of time. You know, if they had to do all this work manually, it takes a lot of time. So Trapeze is the answer that we have.
Just some couple of questions. Is Trapeze kind of like the state of the art of what other service providers, Metro agencies are using?
It's probably one of the top two or three in the public transportation industry. Okay. In not too many years, we will be doing an RFP to look at a review of this service. Both the hardware and the software, at that time we'll know who is interested in that procurement. But
okay,
for now.
The other question is, this is just an amendment, so.
Right.
Every so often you will have
updated maintenance agreements, correct.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right.
I would move to recommend approval.
Second.
Okay, there's a motion and a second. Other discussion? All those in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Sabrina? Item F2, with regard to South Livingston, South Livingston Street Garage.
Yes, so the resolution before you is to amend the 2019 Parking Division adopted capital budget. This would increase funding for the Cap East parking garage, which is also now known as the South Livingston Garage, by $120,000. That would use about $87,000 in parking reserves and $33,000 in reimbursement from MG&E that has been applied to the project, but that we need approval to actually accept and apply towards that funding. Essentially, this is the amount needed to close out that project. We had a lot of very high unanticipated expenses early on, about $630,000 in concrete work just during the very beginning of the project. So we worked throughout the process to keep those change orders down and stay within budget. But now that we've got those final numbers in, we're looking at just a small increase, about, I think, 0.7% increase above what was budgeted to close out that project.
So moved.
Second.
There's a motion and a second.
And the motion is to recommend approval, I assume.
Yes.
Okay, there's a motion to recommend approval. Any discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. So F3, and for those of you who have old agendas, there are two F3s. The F3 that we're doing is the, adopting the interim recommendation or recommendation to adopt the interim recommendation for South Broome Street and 300 block of West Wilson. I don't believe there was anybody registered to speak on this. And if there were, our normal pattern would be to do an introduction so that everybody's on the same page with information and then get feedback from the public so that everybody's on the same page.
Hi. I am Gretchen Aviles Pinheiro with City Traffic Engineering, and I think this is my presentation. Okay. So before we got to the stage of having a recommendation or an interim recommendation, we had multiple meetings with the public, and where we defined our goals and presented different alternatives. So the recommendations that we're going to show in this presentation are for the segments that are scheduled for construction for this year. Okay.
Yeah, those are under the purview of this commission. Mm-hmm. The general corridor plan falls under the board.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So, the Medicine Area Transportation Planning Board, Low Stress Network Bike Documentation, and the Bike Plan, and the Medicine Transportation Plan classify Wilson as a barrier with a high level of traffic stress and in need of on-street bike facilities. So, keeping that in mind, we have some key design parameters. We have a retaining wall. This is on Broome Street. We have a retaining wall, which prevents expansion to the west, and a wall on potential historic impacts, which prevent expansion to the east. We have two northbound lanes that are needed to receive the vehicles from John Noling doing the dual left turn. And we also have dual right turn lanes making the west side a poor candidate for bicycle facilities. So within the existing right-of-way, we had to figure out a way of adding bike facilities on Broome Street. So Tom took the time to figure out the grades at and near the area of our study. And because Wilson has grades that are shallower, that is why many are advocating for Wilson to be the bikeway. Everything green is lower than 3%, 4% grade, and everything in red is 6 or more. We had four public involvement meetings. Two were last year in November. We had two last year in November and December, and two this year in February and April. And also we had several local organization meetings. All the materials that we presented on the PIMs are on our website. So the alternatives reviewed for Wilson Street We have three. I'm going to say one, two, three, but in the report, there are actually five, six, and seven. So the first one is conventional bike lanes, which means that we would have a bike lane going in the same direction as vehicle traffic. So the east and west end of the project, which the limits are Broome and Blair. So the east and west end would have bike lanes going both directions, and then the center portion would only have bike lanes going westbound. The second alternative would be the same for the east and west end, so conventional bike lanes on both sides, but on the center portion, we would have an additional contraflow bike lane to make to have bike traffic going both directions. For this section in the center, the parking would be only available on the north side during off-peak hours. And the same for the third alternative, which is a cycle path, which would have bike lanes going both directions, but together on the south side of Wilson Street. And the same for the parking on the center, north part of Wilson. It would be available only during off-peak hours. We're not ready for a full corridor decision yet, so what we will be talking about would be basically this portion right here. So Broome Street from John Nolan to Doty, and West Wilson Street from Broome to that intersection of Henry and Hamilton. So this is the 300 block of West Wilson. The proposed curb line remains the same as the existing curb for the majority of the block, except for 200 feet near the intersection of Henry and Hamilton, where we would need three additional feet to be able to fit the bike lanes, either the traditional bike lanes, which are alternative 5 and 6 or 1 and 2, or alternative 3 or 7 for the cycle track. We would need three additional feet to fit in the bike accommodations. So adding on-street bike accommodations are a recommendation of the MATPB Bicycle Plan, Low Stress Network Plan, Medicine in Motion Transportation Plan, and Imagine Medicine Comprehensive Plan. Keeping the curbs in the existing location for the majority of the block maintains the existing tree canopy with the exception of one tree removal. So this is the last 200 feet of the West Wilson 300 block close to the Henry and Hamilton intersection. On the left is what it would look like for conventional bike lanes. So you see that we would still need those 3 feet to fit that bike lane. And on the right is the two-way cycle track where we would still need 3 feet for the two-way cycle track. So adding 3 feet from curb to curb for those 200 feet would give us the ability to, when we do a final recommendation for the full corridor, to be able to implement any of the three alternatives. So from curb to curb, we would be able to fit the conventional bike lanes and the two-way cycle track. So at Broome Street, we'll start with the new right turn signal for vehicles traveling on John Nolan, making that right turn onto Broome. That would be a new right turn signal. And green markings from the Capital City Trail, which is around right here, across John Nolan Drive all the way to an off-street 10-foot-wide shared-use path on the east side of Broome Street. To be able to accommodate this shared-use path, we would need to make the lanes narrower and make the terrace and sidewalk wider. So this is the east side of Broome Street, closer to John Nolan, where we currently have about 6 feet of sidewalk and about 2 feet of terrace. This how it would look like. It would be 10 feet for the shared use path and about 3 feet of terrace. We would need to relocate all the utility poles and sign structures that we have. And this is Broome Street, the east side, but closer to Wilson, where we have currently 6 feet of sidewalk and 4 feet of terrace. It would be 10 feet of a shared use path and about 7 feet of terrace, which would be almost enough room to plant a canopy tree, since we will be losing two small trees and two large trees by installing the shared use path.
Is almost enough room, meaning not enough room?
I'm not sure.
Yeah, some of it has to do with power lines, and there are power lines on this side of the street. And so I'm not about to predict what the forester will allow and not allow. Okay. So,
so by room, it's not just lateral, it's vertical.
Generally, they like 8 feet for a canopy tree.
Okay.
Okay, and we have 7.5 feet. Well, they fudge, but then there is power lines there, and so that could be a factor.
Okay.
And I think we should maybe make one clarification, too, because Alder Revere has made this before, is while we will not be moving the curb lines, so the design will allow the canopy to remain, the city forester has made recommendations for some tree removals along Wilson Street.
Okay, so in green is the shared use path, and then we have the northbound right turn lane. Currently, it's a free flow right turn. So we could either do a protected northbound right turn by removing the pork chop island, and vehicles would only be able to turn right when they have a green. And that's the only time when they would be able to make that right turn onto Wilson. Or we can keep the pork chop island and do a raised crossing for pedestrians within that channelized right turn lane. Currently, eastbound and westbound on Wilson, they have the same face, so they get the green at the same time. If we separate that facing and they each get their own green at separate times, we would be able to reduce the number of crashes that are happening currently at the intersection. So, for the recommended configuration for Broome Street between Wilson and Main Street. For between Wilson and Doty, we would be basically extending the off-street shared use path, so making the sidewalk wider, making it 10-foot wide, and then transitioning onto the street and making it a protected two-way cycle track from Doty to Main, since we're not doing any curb work on that block. For this, we would need a floating bus stop, and we would need to remove some parking on that block. There is an alternate configuration, which would be maintaining the sidewalk and the terrace and the curb where they are, which would maintain these two trees right here. You can't see. Okay. That's fine. So between Wilson and Doty, we would maintain the sidewalk and the terrace, so that we would be able to maintain the two trees, and then we would do an off-street protected two-way cycle track. But to do that, we would need to reduce the vehicle traffic going northbound to only one lane. We currently have two lanes going northbound in this block. So what we're going to do is we're going to test it this April or this month. We're going to be testing it to make sure that – to see if it works. And if it works, we can have only one northbound lane between Wilson and Doty. But if it doesn't work, then we would go back to our recommended configuration.
A clarification, that's the pilot project referenced in the resolution.
Yeah. Right. So just to clarify, because that is included in the resolution, subject to a successful pilot.
Mm-hmm.
And we've had conversations about this on Bassett Street and other situations. What would cause you to view it as being successful?
In this particular instance, the Bassett Street pilot project, we will be a full year project, and we'll be looking at maintenance activities and the like. In this particular instance, the pilot project, the measures of effectiveness will probably solely be motor vehicle operations. You think about it, we have a dual left turn coming off of John Norm Drive. It's coming one block. About a third of the traffic is turning right onto Wilson Street, but the other two-thirds is going straight. And if the queuing at the intersection of Wilson and Broome starts to interfere with the operation of the John Nolan Drive intersection, and or there are, let's say, lane shifts that are undesirable, you know, that would be the effect. So I guess
Traffic backups, Tom?
Traffic backups, yes, and merging activities.
So no traffic backups or less traffic backups?
I'd say acceptable levels, yeah, acceptable levels. I think when the left turn from John Nolan is given the green, that's one of the more congested intersections within the city. There needs to be open road for those left turners to go. And if there's not open road for those left turners to go, then we'll need to maintain two northbound lanes.
So just referring also to the pork trap thing. Yeah. So these are two things, right? Because one, you take out a lane going down Broome Street, and my guess is the pork trap lane helps evacuate that queue faster than a right turn only on the signal, right?
Yeah, that's correct. Those are two things that are correct. So signalizing the right turn will also perhaps create queues, and so we need to understand that.
Okay.
So. Yeah, also, the test will be done before construction for this project. For Bethesda Street, you know, that pilot was done after construction. So this will be a much quicker and easier process.
But what I'm saying is you're testing this spring. You're only testing going from 2-to-1 lanes on Broome. You're not testing the combined impact of 2-to-1 lanes plus taking the pork chop out.
Well, we're actually going to be reducing it to only one northbound lane starting on the block between John Nolan and Broome. So it'll be
where the merge has to occur.
Right. Correct. That's where it has to happen to be able to only have one northbound lane in this block between Wilson and Doty. So we'll be able to see that as well.
Okay.
Yeah, I just wanted to make sure everybody was on the same page what we're recommending, what we're voting for.
Yes.
Have you tried to model this at all? Simulate.
Yes.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
The modeling suggests it may not work very well. Mm-hmm. It, intuitively, we think perhaps with so many right-turning vehicles, it seems like, do we really need both lanes going northbound? So
the heavy traffic.
Yeah, so the modeling suggests that won't work, but intuitively, we think it may not be correct.
Yeah, so the modeling software is just a tool. Sometimes works really well, sometimes doesn't. And we had experience with a different project very close from here, kind of on the drive southbound. We removed one of the three lanes, as it approached it on shore. At that time, the modeling tells us it's not going to work either. But we thought, from my observation, we thought it couldn't work. So we did a test over there, end up being successful, right? So we'll see how this one goes.
I have a question. So if ultimately we go with, so when bicyclists are proceeding on John Nolan Drive and they take a left turn onto Broome, and there will be that 10-foot wide, if there's that 10-foot wide shared use path, how is the cost paid for? Is it like, I mean, on a typical sidewalk, you'd have the assessment of the property owner, but like, how would the cost for that be allocated?
That's a good question.
Chris is here.
Chris, we don't have a name tag for you.
So generally, when we have been designating a sidewalk as like a multi-use path or a bike path, we haven't been always assessing. We might stick with the I haven't fully thought this one through yet because these are always a little gray, but we might assess for the typical 5 feet that they would have had, and in this case it would be just damaged squares before the project, and this project wasn't really bought on because the sidewalk's in bad shape. It's more of a transportation enhancement. So we might look at assessing for the normal width of sidewalk that they had before the project, and only the ones that were damaged before the project. That might be one way to do this.
Thanks.
Mm-hmm.
So what I would like to, I want to make sure, is everybody clear about what we're being asked to approve?
No.
Okay. So this is a little bit hard because we had a long report that talked about everything that could be going on. And we're really just taking action on phase A, if you will, the first phase.
Right.
So could you go back and summarize for everybody what your recommendations are?
Mm-hmm.
The recommendations would be subject to the test that you were talking about. And if the test is successful, then you want to go that direction. If it's not successful, you would go the other direction.
Okay.
So just summarize for everybody, if you would.
Okay.
Okay?
So basically, we're going to be doing the 300 block of West Wilson and Broom Street from John Nolan to Doty. Okay. So I will start with the 300 block of West Wilson. We're keeping the curb-to-curb exactly where it is, except for the last 200 feet closer to the intersection of Henry and Hamilton, where that curb-to-curb would have to increase 3 feet to be able to accommodate the three alternatives that we have. So that's West Wilson.
Right, but you have three alternatives. I think that's part of what's confusing.
Okay, so yes, there's three alternatives. Two of them have conventional bike lanes for this portion, for this block.
Mm-hmm.
So the first and second alternative would be conventional bike lanes, so the one on the left. This one right here would be for how it would look like with alternative one and two. And for those two alternatives, we need 3 feet additional to the curb-to-curb that we currently have. And then the third alternative, this is how it would look like on this block, and we would need 3 additional feet from curb-to-curb to accommodate the two-way cycle track.
Yeah, so perhaps I think what I'll do is I think I understand where your confusion is. Okay. We will initially stripe this as conventional bike lanes. All right, that's how it will be striped. There is a bigger question as should we have a cycle track for all of Wilson?
Okay.
For us to have to do the cycle track for all of Wilson, we would need to reconstruct portions of the 100 block of Wilson. Okay, so that decision might get made this summer, right? But we would need to have a logical termini because you can't just have a two-way cycle track here and then bike lanes here and then two-way cycle track here. It has to have a logical termini. So a logical termini would be Broom Street and Martin Luther King Boulevard. That would be a reasonable place, length of thing. But we won't know if we implement that or not for months. Okay. So in likelihood, this will be constructed just with conventional bike lanes. But if the process determines 3 months from now that we should have a cycle track from Broom Street to Martin Luther King Boulevard, then we'll come back. We'll say these geometric changes need to be made. For instance, the bump outs had to be taken out and the like, and then we will convert it at a later time. What we're trying to show here is because there's been a fair amount of controversy. Mm-hmm. So where we're putting the curbs works for whatever ultimate decision happens. And see, that was a key because I think it's been a frustration that sometimes projects have been moved forward without an ultimate vision for the corridor.
So usage of number of bicyclists that would be currently using it and possibly after you redo this, I mean, you keep track of that, right? You take a count, you know?
Yeah, we do. But I think perhaps, in the interest of brevity, we actually have about 180 slides we could show you. Right now, the connection is poor.
Yeah, yeah.
The connection is poor, so keeping track of the number of cyclists would not be a great way to do it now. What we do know is that we have the most used bicycle path probably in the state with the Capital City Trail and the most visited attraction in the state,
right,
the Capitol,
yeah,
and there's no connection.
Okay.
And so one would say there probably should be a connection between those two.
So would the cycle track, I mean, would the number of bicyclists in an area dictate conventional, or is a cycle track a step above that is determined by usage?
Well, oftentimes I think there's a move right now towards all ages and abilities, which is from the National Association of City Transportation Officials, that basically instead of targeting your confident users, you should be targeted a user called interested and concerned. If you're trying to get mode shift. And interested and concerned users prefer separated facilities, protected facilities. And so if you go to, for instance, Minneapolis, Minneapolis has many protected bikeways. You know, you see those little delineators. This corridor would be a great candidate for it. I personally have a few concerns because it's on a hill and we have driveways. So there's complications associated with that type of facility right here. And there's different opinions. You know, we've had many meetings. If we were to make a decision on that right now, it'd be premature. If we were to make a decision on that in July or August, we probably would have gone through the process appropriately.
Okay. That helps me.
Gretchen?
Yeah.
Can you go back to the one where you're here?
This one?
That one. No. The one where you're showing all the bike lanes on the 300 block.
Oh, yes.
There. Yeah. So basically, the curb is the same for all three, right?
Yes.
For this block.
Yes.
For that block. And so the difference is, do you have a two-way or do you have it split out, right? And so my thought is, well, first of all, if we say yes to any one of the alternatives, the curb is the same, right? And so the decision as far as the two-way, the only difference that I see here is that if you flow that around and you're going to make the crossing across John Nolan, that is all going to be two-way, right? That little bit of Broom Street and all that kind of stuff. So it sort of makes sense to keep that two-way or compact. The question is, how does the bike person going this way on Wilson, when do they make the crossover to Wilson to get to that bike lane? Is there a plan for that?
So that's what we were saying. Everything on the right cannot be implemented right now.
Right. I know. So that would.
But it would be implemented from MLK to there. It can't be implemented east of MLK because of the Judge Doyle Square construction. But we would have, if we go with a two-way cycle track, it will go from Broome to Blair. So it will be.
To what?
To Blair.
Okay.
So it will be a complete system. We can't implement from MLK to Blair for a while.
Okay. That was my question.
So is everybody, Bill, did you have something?
Well, all their hands.
Gretchen.
Yeah, I was just going to try and help clarify. I think what the ask is tonight is to approve the recommendation for the move of the curb by 3 foot and not to make a recommendation
right.
on any of the alternatives. Is that right?
Okay. Mm-hmm.
And I did have one question or comment on the broom section where it's able to expand out about a bit to the 7.5 foot terrace.
Yeah.
Because this is part of what would be constructed initially or not? Or this
yes, it is.
Depending on sort of feedback from forestry and trees, et cetera, it might, and I don't know if the wall is still on the side when the terrace starts to expand out, but if possible, it might be good to look to expand that shared use path maybe to 12 foot once it's not so constrained. I know in that first section, there's really no way you can only get the 10
foot. Yeah. And we can explore that. I think we had a meeting with Nolan Shores, which is very interested in this, as well as a few other. The loss of those trees seemed to be of concern to some residents. So what we're trying to do is, you know, kind of balance some people. It was an interesting meeting. There was quite a few complaints. Bikes are going to be on the sidewalk. That's going to be terrible. And then at the same meeting, I asked, well, how do you guys get out to the Capital City Trail on your bikes? And they said, oh, we use a sidewalk. So it's, you know, it's just a
– And if it's wider, it'll work better.
Yes, it is wider. I think what Grant's referring to is that the shy distance from the retaining wall is not very great. typically, oftentimes, you might have 2 feet shy distance. So,
move approvals insofar as we're going to move that curb, the 3 feet for 200 feet. About what it is. Okay.
So, recommendation of what is requested in the resolution, mm-hmm. including a successful pilot or test.
That's correct.
Well, I seconded, I guess, and then I'd have one more comment.
Okay. Okay. So there's a second. No discussion?
Just the other thing to maybe take a look at is the when you're doing the more detailed approach, but the apron cut kind of onto Wilson,
mm-hmm.
Just trying to have sort of the best. I can see some maybe less skilled riders taking too wide of a curve there, also where the right-turning cars are, so just taking a look.
Yeah, so a lot of the detailed design is going to probably occur more in with Jim Wolf and his division than we're supposed to get the concept right, and then we're going to pass the torch to Chris and his crew.
Chair, we also have the auditor, district auditor here.
Yes, I noticed Mike Rivera is here. Did you have any comments, Mike?
Thank you for asking. I'm in support of the resolution.
Okay.
It was purposely drafted by Tom to take into account potential minor modifications to preserve the trees, which is Tom articulated as a great concern. So as long as you're adopting the resolution, I'm very comfortable with it. Thank you.
Okay. Any other discussion? Okay, all those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. Thanks. And thanks for all the clarification.
Yeah.
Okay, so that was our first F3. On some of your agendas, we have a second F3. Sorry for that confusion there. So F4 is a reconsideration of the bus stop closure at Thornton Avenue in Rutledge. What we would normally do is there just one? I beg your pardon? Okay. What we would normally do, we do have someone registered to speak. We would normally ask Drew to give us a summary and introduction so that we're all on the same page and then invite the public comment. So, and there's the material that was distributed, and then there's an additional handout. If you didn't get this, this is the additional handout.
Yeah. My name's Drew Beck from Metro Transit. And I have to apologize for the original graphic that went out for this issue. That's kind of my rudimentary art skills right there. I actually flunked art in fifth grade. And so we had our graphics artist make a much better rendition of the map here. And I don't know if, you can see my hand here. The stop in question is where this red circle is. This is Rutledge, just going westbound on Rutledge right after you cross the river, just past Thornton Avenue. And we had originally proposed removing the stop just because of its proximity to two other bus stops, the one back here at Walton Place. It's about a 16th of a mile from the stop that got removed. And then also, as you go around the corner onto Rogers Street at Spade right across from the school there, that's about 11 hundredths of a mile. And so we thought that the proximity was a little close. This was kind of a concern from our operations unit that we were stopping so frequently within, you know, three stops within that distance. And we back in the 2013 to 2017 transit development plan, which is our current current document that we refer to, they recommend a minimum distance between bus stops of between about 0.2 of a mile to a quarter mile. So with this stop out of the picture, right now there is a little over a quarter mile between the this stop and the one around the corner here. So I don't know if you have questions or that. I hope this makes it a little more clear than that travesty I sent out.
So this bus stop was removed.
Mm-hmm. Removed back in August of 2018.
And we approved it to remove it. And we do have someone, Sally Weideman, would you like to come up and speak? You have 5 minutes if you need it.
Chair, point of order. I think she
has 3 minutes. I beg your pardon. Okay. It's not a public hearing. Yeah, thank you for the correction, Gary.
Okay.
Great. It's not a public hearing. Notice of public hearing, so 3 minutes.
Okay.
Thank you.
And I'm actually here on
I do live on Rutledge Street, but I'm here on behalf of my neighbor, Amy Miller, who was unfortunately not able to be here tonight, so she asked me to come and kind of read her statement to you, so that's what I'm going to do. Thank you very much for adding restoration of the bus stop at the corner of Rutledge and Thornton to the agenda of this meeting and for giving me an opportunity to speak. I live at 1507 Rutledge Street and use the bus to commute to work, for errands, for social and cultural events downtown. I'm also a nurse practitioner, and my comments reflect my healthcare perspective. Over the 25 years that I've lived at this address, we've experienced a slow decline of bus service. Loss of the number 3 bus on weekends, resulting in no weekend bus service via Rutledge. Loss of the number 3 bus during peak hours. Removing the number 10 route from Rutledge and ending the 38 Express via John Nolan in the morning. And most recently, it was the elimination of 2 stops on Rutledge, which leaves us with essentially a 5-block gap without a stop if one counts the river. We have tried doing without it since September, and it's not working for us. It's a safety issue in the number of ways. We live in a neighborhood of aging baby boomers mixed with multi-dwelling rental units. Having good access to public transportation allows older people to age in place, and erosion of transportation services presents challenges to continued living in one's home. As I mentioned in my letter, traversing a longer distance to bus stops put people at greater risk of falls. Seniors who drive are also involved in more motor vehicle accidents, so they increase the risk of injury to themselves and the public. As a city, we should be encouraging the use of public transportation for seniors. The reduced senior prices help that. The ease of using the bus with frequent enough bus stops increases the likelihood of reliance on the bus. Through traffic in our neighborhood is a safety concern. There has been discussions about traffic calming measures. I have observed increased speed of the buses past our house since the bus stop was eliminated. When buses stop, vehicles behind them also slow, and so the stop has an effect of calming traffic. Lastly, there's an important comfort and aesthetic aspect to the Rutledge-Thornton stop. Its placement with houses to the north and west offers a windbreak. The stop at Rogers and Spade exposes one to the winds that sweep across the Marquette playground. The Rutledge-Thornton stop offers a beautiful view of the Har as it flows into Lake Monona. A neighbor who lives in the 1400 block of Spade Street with equal access to 2 stops a half a block from his house used the Rutledge-Thornton stop instead. He described the stop as the most beautiful bus stop in all of Madison. There are many in the neighborhood who choose the stop for similar reasons as well as convenience. All the neighbors...
People mind if she goes ahead and finish?
2. Okay, go ahead. All the neighbors that live near this former stop signed the petition to restore it. We request that this stop be restored. Thank you for your time and consideration. Amy Miller. Thank you.
Was there anybody else who... Thank you for coming. Is anybody else who wished to speak who didn't fill out our registration form? Okay, so this is on our agenda as an action item if we so choose to take action this evening. As Gary pointed out to me earlier, oftentimes when we make metro service changes, we talk about it at one meeting, and then everybody goes back and thinks about it, and then we don't take action until the next meeting. So that's one of the things that's been our pattern. So
yeah, the other thing I would mention is that I know that it's a different process, admittedly, at the city council when a member who is absent or votes in the majority of a motion that passes wants to move reconsideration. It's usually a 2-step process, a 2-meeting process. One, to consider whether we're going to even take it up, and then decide is usually the process. And I know this is kind of an item of first impression. We haven't had one of these. Even when under Transit and Parking Commission, I don't recall that we've ever had something that was designated a reconsideration. So I just have a concern about the process. There's some things to think about here, but I'm willing to consider it if the rest of the body wants to do that.
Well, we certainly can ask for additional information and, wait to actually take action at a future meeting if there is Yeah. People are looking to get additional information.
So
we've got the petitions from the neighbors in front of us, so we know how many people are interested in seeing it, but there might be additional things that we want to see.
Well, I think, you know, there are standards for industry usage as far as spacing of bus stops, and I think what is the recommendation generally for bus stops in a municipality like Madison? Do you have, isn't it the MPO, say?
It's down here.
Yeah, it's generally around between 2/10 and a quarter of a mile between stops.
Okay. I would move not to restore the bus stop.
Okay, there's a motion. Is there a second?
I'll second that.
Okay, there's a motion and a second. So discussion?
Okay, discussion.
I mean, I look at it and it's well within the parameters. The issue is, you know, on the one hand is convenience. The other part is these buses have to get a long ways in a limited amount of time. And so every time you put it in a stop, that makes one thing a little bit more convenient. It puts pressure on others to make their connections, drivers to not have rest at the end of the time. So while I certainly empathize with the people who had long used that stop, I think our responsibility is making sure it gets from one end to the other without having to risk speeding and all that kind of stuff. So that is the purpose why I moved there.
And I would add that it is used by the number 3 bus, one of our workhorse bus routes, and it sometimes has on-time difficulties. And I'm not sure this will improve that on-time difficulty. I think that's what's been implied. So that's another consideration that I would consider voting for this motion.
Has this improved on-time performance? It's been closed for a few months, right?
Yeah, I mean, I can't say if it has or hasn't.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we haven't done that detail of an analysis.
Mm-hmm. But that was the whole purpose.
Yeah, that was a big part of it, is stopping in kind of rapid succession there. And you know, like one of our driver trainers says, that at Metro we sweat seconds because they can make the difference between a transfer and not.
Sure.
Yeah, that gets me concerned about meeting transfers.
Mm-hmm. People are riding all the way through,
right,
relying on those transfers.
Right. Other discussion? So all of those in favor of not restoring the bus stop?
Aye.
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 Okay. Opposed?
No.
Okay. So motion carries.
Thank you.
All right. Okay. Thanks, everybody.
Thank you.
They can't hear us?
No.
They need to speak into the microphone a little more. I think we're trying to. I'm sorry, so people can't hear in the back of the room? Okay, so apparently we need to be more. We have a different room that we're going to be in the future. Unfortunately, we couldn't be in there for tonight. So we'll all make more of an effort to speak into the microphone. Okay, so we are got 5 minutes till the public hearing. We just have item F5. Rebecca Kemble is no longer on the Transportation Commission. We need, pardon me, another participant, hopefully an alder to join this group to help us finish out. Grant Foster volunteered to serve that role, so I would entertain a motion to appoint.
Make a motion that Grant Foster be appointed to the special rules subcommittee.
Okay.
I'll second.
Okay, there's a motion and a second. All those in favor? Oh, discussion, pardon me?
Yeah. Were you advised that you had to put this on the agenda with a Legistar number? Usually, I mean, maybe the past isn't necessarily what we need to do, but appointing subcommittee members usually, I don't think, has a Legistar number.
I don't know about the Legistar number. All I know is that the commission has to approve it. If I read 3301 and clearly the commission has to approve it. I couldn't just do it myself.
Okay, so that's changed.
Yeah, so I went through that with.
That's fine.
Don. Okay.
That's fair.
All right, so further discussion?
There's a second.
Yes, there was a second.
There was a second.
Mm-hmm. Mike seconded. So there's a motion and a second. Further discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. Okay, so we have 4 minutes till.
Time to take a break.
Why don't we break for 3 minutes and come back at 6 o'clock for the public hearing? Because we don't have time to do the next agenda item. Okay, thanks everybody. A lot going on tonight. So we still have a quorum? That's good. Okay, so we're going to move into the public hearing on the proposed service changes. So we have several folks here. Chuck, go ahead.
I'll get started and welcome all the folks that are coming to the public hearing. Drew Beck is our planning manager. You met him moments ago. Mick Roush is our marketing manager. I just want to give a quick overview both for those attending the public hearing and for newer members that emphasizing that our protocol is to have a public hearing but not ask for any action until a month from now at our May meeting. Our second May meeting is our plan. So first of all, I have to emphasize that. Second, when you look at our public comments, I want to just highlight that some of our proposals are more controversial than others. That is somewhat common. I wish I could say that anytime we make a proposal, there's not a negative comment, but we do. And so as a result, some of these proposals, I want to be clear, we bring to you not yet as a recommendation from staff. For example, Route 31 impacts the Route 34 and the 39. We've heard a lot of comments on that. We want to listen, and we keep the public input process open in the coming days and weeks. So we will reflect on that. So I want to emphasize that. Whereas others, the new Route 23 to Sun Prairie, I couldn't be happier to have the opportunity, because Sun Prairie has been waiting a number of years to have service provided there, and for a variety of reasons, we're figuring out a way to make this work. Sun Prairie has been very good to work with on this. They have also adopted this route configuration that you see before you, Route 23. But there are a mix of things here, so we will come back in a month with our final recommendations. I wanted to be clear that some of these we will continue to get additional public input and decide whether that's a staff recommendation or not. And even if it is a staff recommendation, we understand that there's times that the decision is made differently, and that's part of the process. So with that, I think we have an overview before the public hearing starts.
Again, I'm Drew from Planning and Scheduling at Metro, and I'm going to try to breeze through this as quickly as possible. So if you've got a question, just throw something at me, and I'll stop and try to answer. If you look, just to start with, if you look up in the right corner of this slide, you'll see it says page 3 in packet. And that way, we've got a little bit of a summary here, but you can refer to what was in the packet with that little key up there in the corner. So the first thing that we've got up here is just a the swapping of a trip from one, what we call via on Route 6, to the other. We want to shift the service from the current Mineral Point Midvale via to the Tepford Tokay via. And the reason we want to do that is when the Route 55 service comes in from Verona and Epic, there's a lot of people that a number of people that want to transfer to the Route 6 and have it go via the Tepford Tokay via. And so we thought, well, that's an easy change to do. It doesn't really affect service levels or anything, but we thought it was a good idea, and so we're proposing it. Next, this one's a little bigger deal. Route 11, which is a route that operates during the peak periods, kind of between the West Transfer Point, the campus, and it actually goes all the way east to the Dutch Mill Park and Ride Lot in the morning, and then does it the opposite in the afternoon. The current routing, we've got it on Whitney Way, Science Drive. That's okay. What we're proposing to do is to switch it over to go straight east on Tokay from the West Transfer Point, up Midvale, back Mineral Point to Seago. And the idea is we're going to kind of enlarge the route's coverage area and give direct service from that larger neighborhood straight to the UW Hospital and campus.
It's something that we've heard off and on through the years, and it was also a recommendation in a neighborhood plan back in, I think, 2009. Service to Science Drive will still be maintained by Route 6, but, Route 6 doesn't go directly up onto the campus in UW Hospital. There's a second part to this change, too, in order to kind of make this longer distance of seeing here. We also have to shorten it in towards downtown. Go ahead.
Can I just ask a question?
Sure.
Go back. So Route 6 goes down Science Drive.
To Mineral Point.
And then if you wanted to get to UW Hospital, it goes through the Seago Mineral Point intersection. Is that a transfer then that you would make, or would you just walk it? I mean, where does 6 go? Is 6 down Regent?
It goes straight east on Mineral Point, yeah.
Yeah, it goes down Regent then,
yeah.
Right?
Right.
So what are your other options if you're over there on 6 as far as getting to UW?
Well, this is the most direct. The other thing you can do is go back to the West Transfer Point or Stan Whitney Way, and the 56 and 57 come through the commuter routes.
Okay.
And take the two.
Or take the two directly to the campus. It's a little longer slog, but
okay,
it does go directly out of the campus.
That's a technical term of slog?
Yeah, slog is a long-held industry standard word. This kind of shows the impact of the change we're proposing. The pinkish gray color there, kind of on the north side of the map, is the areas that will no longer be within the quarter of a mile bus stop. But the blue shade is the additional locations, the additional neighborhood that would be within a quarter mile of the bus stop. So we're, again, trying to enhance that service area. The black is the current route, and the pinkish is the proposed. And here's the current routing of Route 11, which is kind of confusing, but works. It's on State Street in the Capitol Square. That's the big thing to note here. What we're proposing, and in order to be able to maintain the time on this route, is it would drop down to Broome and Bassett like this. So it would no longer be on State Street or the square. The thing to note here is that during the time that Route 11 operates, there's a lot of service coming eastbound on Johnson Street. So a person and going to State Street and the square. So a person can actually get off on Johnson at Park, the big bus stop there, and any number of buses are going to be coming up behind it to take you to the square. It's a transfer, but in most cases it's going to be an almost immediate transfer. So that's in order to squeeze, to enlarge the route on the west side, we kind of had to squeeze a little bit downtown here. So that's the upshot. This is the new Route 23 service to Sun Prairie that both Metro staff and MPO staff and City of Sun Prairie staff have been working very diligently on, and I think we've come up with a really nice structure here. The route would be limited stop on East Washington Avenue between the Capitol Square and kind of the out by the American Parkway and Sun Prairie. In the morning, let's see if I can do this right. Let's say you're on the Capitol Square and you want to go to work somewhere in the there's the big commercial development there on the kind of the southwest side of Sun Prairie out there by Hepker Road and American Parkway and Blue Aster and all of that. You'd hop on the bus and be able to get to your place of appointment of employment and in a fairly quick time. Right now you really can't do that. So you're getting out to the Sun Prairie area from Madison to get a job out there. And then the route comes around through sort of the higher density neighborhoods to the kind of the south of Highway 151 there, O'Keefe Avenue. There's a lot of development happening there, a lot of new stuff. And there's a, you can see there's a little green logo for a park and ride lot there, just sort of west of Reiner Road. Sun Prairie is putting a new park and ride lot in there, and this route would serve it. It would be the last stop on the route before it heads back downtown Madison in the morning. Similar in the afternoon, people that have commuted into Madison from Sun Prairie would hop on the bus on the square or along East Wash there at those limited stops. This time the bus would go straight to the park and ride lot through the neighborhood, O'Keefe Avenue, Sun Prairie neighborhood there. Then it would come back through the large commercial district, supposedly picking up Madison employees who live in Madison but work out there, and bring them downtown. So it's kind of working both directions, was the design of it. And I think it's almost elegant.
I think you're going to see commuters from Columbus and the rural eastern part of Dean County going to that park and ride lot.
That's an expectation, yes. Very, very much so. I agree. And so that's kind of, I don't know if you've got any questions about how that operates. But.
So given the limited number of spots there, my assumption is that Milwaukee, is that the primary intersection for other buses?
Yep.
Because we don't necessarily have a lot of riders just right around those. This is sort of needs a feeder system, right?
Well, the Madison portion, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, it functions as a standalone commuter route, of course. But, yeah, the nice thing about the Milwaukee Street stops is that you have routes crossing there from both the east transfer point and the north transfer point. So you can get to that location on coming to either of the transfer points.
Okay.
And transfer to that route. And, again, we have a stop out by Easttown, a similar thing where people might be working out there and need the commuter service. So, yeah, we've tried to select as few of stops as possible to keep the route quick, keep the commute quick, but also try to pick up some of the most likely locations for people to get on and off. Yep, I think that's it. Route 25 is going to remain intact. Route 23 kind of supplements it in a way, but we're going to keep it operating. What we're proposing here is to put some of the we're trying to integrate some of the limited stops on both the 25 and 29 so they coincide. Right now it's kind of Route 29 stops here, but Route 25 stops there. So we're trying to kind of standardize it more. You can see the new stops are white. The eliminated stops are the red. Again, we're just kind of moving them around a little bit, not necessarily eliminating. That makes sense. Route 26. This is actually came from a suggestion from the city streets department. The current route on the left, you notice that it makes a turn off of Wall Street over to City View. City Streets finds that to be kind of a difficult street to maintain in the winter. It's a hard thing to plow. And so we were looking at dropping it actually all the way down on Crossroads to City View and not going on Wall Street. Wall Street's narrow, parking on both sides, and it's not going to take any more time to do this than it would have using Wall Street, even though it's a little further distance. Route 26, which is the route that serves the UW Hospital in the American Center, way out there on the east side, We're proposing to adjust the departure times at Easttown. That route operates between Easttown and the hospital, essentially. We're going to adjust it by 4 minutes on weekdays and approximately 15 minutes in the morning and 6 minutes earlier in the afternoon on weekends. This is to kind of help us with some
what we call interlining issues between buses. It's going to help us utilize buses a little more efficiently and probably reduce some transferring as well. The need to transfer anyway. Route 29, now this is an interesting one. We just got a notification today that the, I should say one of the reasons that we're looking at this change, big reason, was because we weren't, our easement inside the Northside Town Center parking lot, to use the park and ride lot, wasn't necessarily going to be renewed. And so we thought, well, we've got to look at a way to get around that. Well, it turns out today it sounds like the property owner out there is open to some discussion about maybe keeping that easement open for another year at least. And so this one is more tentative, I think, than the rest. So stay tuned for further details. But the proposal was to put it down on Sherman Avenue and then also go ahead and pop back just quick. Pop back onto Aberg and go by the north transfer point with it. So anyway, that's enough of that. Route 29, we're also proposing to take it off of what's called Lower State Street, west of Gorham Street. It's kind of a safety move because there is so much pedestrian traffic down there, and it also gives the route a little more time. Probably a minute in each direction. We're also, like I said before, we're going to be looking at changing the limited stop locations on East Washington Avenue, moving to Baldwin Street instead of Dickinson Street, also opening one up at Livingston Street there by Festival Foods, and, of course, the Webster Street one stays there. And the idea is to, again, consolidate our limited stops for our limited stop routes. And now here's where it kind of gets interesting. This kind of started out as an exercise to see how we could serve the new Penny Branch Library when it moves, it's in the process of moving, from its the old location of Cottage Grove Road and Monona Drive. It's moving over towards Dempsey Road, which is about a third of a mile east from where it was. So it becomes a long walk from the existing Route 16 and 31 that operate on Monona Drive. So we looked at ways of serving the new library location as well as the YMCA, which is also near the corner of Dempsey and Cottage Grove Road. They're apparently ramping up more of their summer youth programs, and so getting to that YMCA is becoming more and more of a draw for people. Right now, we don't have much in the way of service to that YMCA. We also want to serve Dutch Mill kind of all day, every day, because there's inner-city buses that are picking people up, dropping people off out there at the Dutch Mill Park and Ride Lot. And another thing, Route 31, which is this neat route that we started operating about 6 years ago, currently only operates during the peaks on weekdays, you know, the a.m. and p.m. peak commute times. So if you're living in Owl Creek, you don't see a bus between approximately 9 a.m. and 4 p.m. the way it is now. What we'd like to do is add the midday service out to Owl Creek, too, so that route, Route 31, becomes an all-day, everyday route. I think it's the only route in our entire system that runs all days on weekdays and also weeknights, but doesn't run during the middle of the day. So we want to kind of standardize it with the rest of the service. And the nice thing about that is let's say you are I'll get to this. We're also combining service from two other routes, the 34 and the 39, which don't necessarily haul a lot of people, and we're trying to make it enhance Route 31 enough that it becomes a very desirable route. And, of course, the final goal is the big one. We had to do this without spending any more money, so we had to kind of squeeze over here to make it pop out over here is the old symbolism we use. This is the proposed structure. No, this is the current routing of Route 31. It does serve the East Transfer Point, Flom Road, with Senate La Follette, the middle and high school. The service currently is only hourly during the peak periods on weekdays, and it's hourly at evenings and on weekends, but there's no service in the middle of the day on weekdays. What we're proposing to do is kind of shift some of the coverage of Route 31 east of Highway 51, so it takes over much of Route 39. What will happen is you'll end up with 30-minute frequencies on Route 31 in the Owl Creek area, along the whole route. From its current 60 minutes, we'll be increasing it to 30-minute frequencies, so it'll be twice as frequent. And it'll stay at 60-minute frequencies during the evenings and weekends, but also you'll now have the 60-minute frequencies in the middle of the day on weekdays. In order to pull this off, we would propose that the service would get shifted from Monona Drive over to Stoughton Road. Stoughton Road, obviously, you're not going to be stopping along it, so it's a fairly fast trip. We would be now serving the new Penny Library. We'd stay serving the Dean Clinic, which is now served by Route 39, also the YMCA. And Route 39 does serve them, but not all that well. It's a long loop, long ride around if you get on at the Y. Then all trips, again, we will be serving Dutch Mill Park and Ride Lot on every trip rather than being kind of an on-again, off-again thing and reduce passenger confusion. We think it would improve the service to Owl Creek neighborhood because the midday service is added. Right now, if, let's say, you are a student at La Follette or Senate, and you have an exam and you're out at noon, you don't see any buses until after school, at 3:30. So you're kind of stuck there, or you go right around town on other routes. This way, you can return home to your Owl Creek neighborhood from school in the middle of the day. The frequency, again, during the peak periods is going to be increased to every 30 minutes from the current 60 minutes. By adding the midday service out there, all of a sudden that neighborhood will become part of the paratransit service area. Senate and La Follette students traveling to Owl Creek will see a longer ride. We're not cutting them off, but what will have to happen is they'll need to get to the East Transfer Point via Route 16 and then catch the Route 31 up there instead of just catching it right at the school. I should also note that we still have the existing what we call supplemental school day service that runs directly from the Owl Creek neighborhood to La Follette and Senate. That won't change, so that the vast majority of students are already using that service. But the route would be proposed to move away from the schools and operate out of the East Transfer Point instead.
What is the time for the supplemental school routes? I mean, is it just one bus that goes one each morning?
Yeah, it's a trip to Senate and a trip to La Follette. So it's two bus trips because the start times are like 45 minutes apart. So it's
okay, but one bus
to La Follette and one bus to Senate.
And then returning, same thing,
same and afternoon,
leaves yeah. like right after school kind of thing. So kids in after school stuff, they're the ones who hit the 30-minute extra time.
Yes, exactly. Okay. Yep. And again, the bottom bullet there is, that's okay. We have, we'll now have midday service where there isn't any right now. Here's Route 34, which we this is where we would get the hours of service to give to Route 31 to operate in the middle of the day. Again, it's budget neutral. We have to take the hours from somewhere in the system to give it somewhere else. And so that's the idea here is the hours that were on Route 34 would be applied to Route 31. Route 34 is the link between the direct link between the East Transfer Point and Madison College. There still will be a possibility to either ride Route 70 to the north transfer point and ride the 20 back, or ride from the east transfer point to Easttown on the 30 and come back on the 20 to get to Madison College. But it increases, again, increases travel time and causes a transfer. Yeah, I think it was a groan. This is the Route 39. It operates hourly during the day. There's no evening service. We would be shifting the service from Route 39 over to Route 31. The service area is mostly covered by the new Route 31. Dempsey Road maintains its peak period service with Route 38. Buckeye Road would walk down to Monona Drive or up to, in this case, it would be Buckeye for the 37-38. Vonden Road, there's a bit of a gap there. You could easily, or not easily, you could walk to Route 31. And the service is, the direct service is lost to World Dairy. It becomes about a third of a mile walk to Route 31 and its new routing on Flom and Agriculture. Yes, sir.
Drew, when we meet again after we've heard comments in a month or so, is there a way that you can overlay 39, 31, and 38 so that we can better see just how these eliminated ones interact with
right.
routes?
And
that
it,
would help helpful.
It's funny you should say that because we actually put one of those maps together, and it was so Byzantine that we were kind of afraid to. So, but yeah, we certainly can't. We'll bring
it. Wouldn't be too much of a slog.
We'll blink them, so we'll blink through them quickly, so you can see them on the same background.
Sort of
that
like
helps.
Original movies.
We'll try
yeah.
that.
Right. Yep. Yeah, we can pull it off.
Okay.
We can do it.
I think it's important.
That yep. Yeah, that's fine. Yep, we can do that. So, in summary, the benefits is we get all day consistent service to the Owl Creek neighborhood, as well as consistent service to the new Penny Library, the YMCA, Dutch Mill Park and Ride Lot, and the Dean Clinic there off of Buckeye Road and Stoughton Road. The more negative impacts are Senate and La Follette lose that one-seat ride to and from Owl Creek. It's still there, but it's a longer route and requires a ride and requires a transfer. Madison College students lose the direct access from the East Transfer Point as well. Again, it's still a possible ride. It's just going to take longer and require transfer.
Order.
If you want to speak, would you fill out a blue form so that you can speak when is the time appropriate time?
Okay.
So, right. So Drew, the trade-off for Owl Creek is the good news is. It goes every 30 minutes, and it goes all day long.
Yep.
So a kid who is sick until 10 o'clock in the morning, he now has to go through a transfer point, but he can get on a bus 30 minutes perhaps sooner to that. Okay.
Right, and you wouldn't need to call a taxi or whatever.
So in a way, he still gets there within an hour.
And I should add again that this is just a way of showing how existing resources could be reallocated to increase service on Route 31 or serve the new library. It's not a staff recommendation at this point. It's just sort of an idea to show you kind of the constraints we're under when trying to redo some of the service.
I just had a couple of thoughts on it. You know, in many ways, it's frustrating, as you were talking before, about the resources, financial resources we have to allocate that we have to make, be in a position of having to consider these tough decisions. But, you know, one of the things I look at for the residents of my district that live south of the Beltline and Owl Creek and the like is I see it's important to be able to continue and increase the access to Senate and La Follette for them. I know we're talking about adding the service to the Penny Branch, but a lot of residents in my district that live south of the Beltline, the closest library they go to is in McFarland. So they use the McFarland Public Library. So having the ability to go way up to the new branch for residents south of the Beltline, I'd have to get feedback from my residents about that, whether or not that's critical for them. And another thing I look at with the Route 34 and 39 eliminations, one of the things that I hear from business owners in the industrial area in my district north of the Beltline is they have so many employees that are parking on the street. And then what happens is the truck traffic that has to go through and turn into the businesses. Oftentimes the streets are so crowded with commuter traffic, parking, that it becomes difficult for the trucks to get to where they need to be. So it's given me a lot to think about.
We're trying to absorb as much around 39 into 31, so we're not going to be missing many of the areas that Route 39 is already serving. The other thing is you'll start seeing half-hour service during the peaks instead of currently it's hourly. So you're actually going to probably help a lot of commuters, I think, with the enhanced schedule.
Yeah, so and hopefully we can do some things that encourage people to take the bus more so that we can reduce the number of times I have to call city traffic engineering about getting signage up in that area for the businesses. And you know, I know we're here for a public hearing to listen to the folks that are assembled, but the only other comment that I wanted to make, actually going back to Route 11, mm-hmm. One of the questions I had was how much consideration was given Exact Sciences and the ability of people to get to Exact Sciences, because I know last year before the council, we had a proposal for TIF or something for Exact Sciences. And during that discussion, one of the things that came up is how that business is making a commitment to pay living wages, benefits. And it was really something I was impressed with because I saw it as a way for a lot of folks who maybe don't have a college degree to actually get a job they can support their family on and have benefits. And like one of the focuses I had was actually ensuring these people can get to work at it and apply for jobs, go to work, and work in a place like Exact Sciences. So I know we can't have a route that caters to one particular employer, but in considering that route, I just want to make sure we're thinking about people that would have job opportunities to work there and
sure.
how it's going to impact them.
This is a campus route. It runs on UW campus. They actually fund this service. And it's sort of a commuter route for people in the afternoon only on weekdays to get from the main part of campus out to Eagle Heights. And the Route 80 is the normal circulator there, and it can be a long ride, and it can be a very crowded ride. So this is out there to sort of supplement Route 80. And what we're showing here is an additional trip in the schedule. We kind of spread the span of the service a little bit so we could get that earlier trip at 4:30 and then the next one at 4:55. And the idea here is just to give people a little bit better opportunity to commute from the campus out to Eagle Heights. This is actually okayed by the UW Transportation Office. They think it's a great idea. this is a situation where we have a bus stop. We have a pair of bus stops at the intersection of East Washington Avenue and Dickinson Street, kind of west of the Ohara River there. And it's an unsignalized intersection. There is a median in the middle, but it scares me to watch people try to cross East Washington Avenue during rush hours. You know, you got six lanes of traffic, and of course everybody's minding the speed limit, and running across to get over to the bus stop across the street. And we think it's a hazard. It just is a hazard. So we're proposing that we eliminate these two stops, and the distances back to the stop at the Ohara River or forward to Baldwin Street are within about an eighth of a mile from Dickinson Street. I don't know. Here is the
tally of the feedback we received as of noon today. Route 6, we didn't get any I don't know if you guys want me to go through all these. But
it's also in your packet, and we also included...
It was an updated version. Cool.
So that includes everything we've received that was in your packet, and then there's a week or two in between that wasn't included before that isn't there now. So it's all tallied on that on your handout, and that's the same tally that's on the screen.
Cool.
Did you have any questions or comments before or after the public speak? What's your preference?
What we would typically do is allow the public to speak, and then we'll have discussion and comments and feedback for Metro and other things that they could think about and perhaps consider before it comes back to us in a month. And if there's additional feedback that they receive, that'll all be incorporated, so we'll have a full document the next time. Okay.
Sorry, I whizzed through it so fast.
Susan, I have you as the first person who wishes to speak. She doesn't indicate whether she supports or opposes. She's suggesting we postpone the decision on Route 11, but I'll let her go ahead and speak. And this is a public hearing, so you have 5 minutes.
Hello again. For the record, my name is Susan DeBose, and I live at 610 North Midvale Boulevard and ride the number 11 a lot. One of the two proposed changes to the number 11 route is near the West Transfer Point. The change would divert it from its current path down Science Drive to going down Tokay to Midvale Boulevard instead, before going back to Seago. I typically do not go to Science Drive because the road is not accessible, but want to report what I experienced Monday as I traveled from the West Transfer Point on the last number 11 of the morning. There is a major UW health building on Science Drive that gets linked to the hospital on campus by the number 11. Two people got on there. While it is true that the number 6 stops there as well, it is disingenuous in the packet to suggest that the number 6 could substitute for the number 11. The number 6 never goes even close to the hospital, maybe a mile and a half at the closest point. However, it does make the good point that the rerouting would increase bus access to a certain area. And to my chagrin, the responsible party on UW's Transportation Services Office is not raising even a finger to say anything about the loss of a link. I am not going to do her job because I want to use some time for something else. My major concern is in regards to the second main change proposed to the number 11's route, and that would be to take the route off the square to go more directly down to John Nolan Drive. I recommend postponing any such move until a clear policy can be made regarding the use of the square. There are a lot of pros and cons to the issue, and it should not be made de facto and in a short-sighted way by the gradual creep of Metro reroutes. An example of how such short-sighted moves could have a deleterious long-range effect was Metro's proposal a few years back to eliminate the bus stop on the square that is heavily used now. After the bus stop on Mifflin Street at the top of State Street was taken away. Fortunately, the TPC had rejected that short-sighted proposal. At the same time, it is easy to imagine that Metro is frustrated by what has been a continual punting of the issue of buses being routed through the square. Metro is continually made aware of the high cost involved, and not just in terms of the time that it takes. Postponing a discussion on the proposal puts pressure on your companion body that deals with long-term policy to make a determination if it is not to abrogate its responsibility. For my part, I intend to testify at the TPB at its next meeting, suggesting that it take up the issue, perhaps developing an ad hoc subcommittee similar to the way the TPC developed an ad hoc committee to deal with the issue of downtown parking. One more comment is that I cannot help noting the contradictory logic being used to buttress the two major changes to Route 11.
That would be your 5 minutes, Susan, if you could wrap up, please.
I have a little more. On the one hand, the west side rerouting would enhance accessibility. On the other hand, taking the bus off the square reduces accessibility. Although Metro ignores the issue of accessibility there in favor of the issue of time gained. But the city and the county governments currently provide employees unlimited bus passes. Metro is encouraging other employers to do the same, including the state government. A major use of
point
the
of order.
Yeah, that it's
anybody that's testifying that has more than 5 minutes, they certainly can provide the information to Metro. And as we know, we're not going to decide this tonight, that we can get that information.
I would like to continue because it takes me longer to.
Can I donate some of my time for you?
No.
I'll be happy to do so.
Thank
you. I can wrap things up
very easily.
The point of order, are you all right with that?
Am I all right with it? I think there are avenues to provide all the generous and information that Susan can give us, as she has over the number of years that she's
been. Yeah. Could you provide it to us in writing? Would that be an opportunity? You have it written down. Could you do that with us, and then we could share that with everyone?
Well, I'd like to make the point, because TV cameras see the testimony, whereas they don't see my written comments.
Beg your pardon?
It'll be in the record, right, on the Legistar.
We could certainly post it in Legistar. We could. Mm-hmm.
Let me finish with one question then. What good is providing more access to people if they can't get to work? That's why I think it should be postponed until you make a policy that's clear.
Do you want to leave your written comments with?
I'll send Ann.
That would be appreciated. Okay. Thank you very much. Forgive me if I say your names incorrectly, Ricardo Rosas. And then next up would be Lori Price. Ricardo? Yes. Next up after Ricardo would be Lori Price, just so you know who's next. Thank you.
First of all, it's an honor to be here, and I thank you all
all of you gentlemen for being here. I am all for this proposal number 23 because I do travel to Sun Prairie, and sometimes I have to be there for certain things. That's the only thing more I can say to my for 23, but at number 6, I take number 6 from Columbus Lane all the way down to the west side, and there's a clinic out there to call for the VA veterans out there. The only thing I request from all of you, if you could get together and pull a, put a bus hub or build a bus hub at a corner of Science Drive or Science Course, and it will be right across more walking distance right to the clinic. They do have a bus stop when I go there, but it's to get up by the grass. But when there's snow, he drops me off by the driveway, which is that's fine too. But there's no sidewalk there or bus hub. I would love to have a bus hub put on the corner of this, of Science Drive and Science Court, for that way when in the wintertime when I have to go there and I ride a bus all the time, I don't have a vehicle. I love taking the bus. I can read my books while the bus driver is driving. So I really like that. But most of all, I would be appreciative if they put a bus up there because when the wind blows out there, there's nothing covered. And it winds, snow, rains, and you're out there in the middle of nowhere unless you have to go back to the building and wait it, but then you could miss the bus. So that's about it. That's all I have much to say, you know. But I think it's, thank you so much again for a wonderful, you folks for allowing me to, you know, speak for this, you know, for not only for this vet, but for an other old vet like myself. And I thank you. And that's all I have to say.
Thank you.
Coming. All right.
So next we have Lori Price, and after that, Sarah White would be next.
Hello, my name's Lori Price, and I'm a resident of the city of Sun Prairie, and both my husband and I work in the downtown area. When we took a look at the proposed route, we noticed it was mainly on the far west side of Sun Prairie, and that is mostly newer development with younger families. We noticed the route did not go into the older parts of the city where many low-income and the elderly live, and that was kind of disheartening to see that because we feel that that might be some of your ridership, could be quite a bit of your ridership. Of where it goes now, it's going to hit these younger families with small children who probably may not ride it in case they got to get home to a sick child. So I'm worried that this route may not be successful. And also I'd like to see the bus come into various parts of Sun Prairie. I think I've listed them on my letter I had sent to you earlier. Some of them was in the downtown area. I'd like to see a stop along Vandenberg Street and Andrews, South Bird and Talon Place, Main Street and Park Circle, Main Street and Dewey Street, and, like I said, one stop again in the downtown area. Some of these streets intersections I've listed are in front of large apartment complexes where frequently the low-income housing is, including in our area. And so that's what I would like to see. I am thrilled that they're considering about, the route to Sun Prairie. I think public transportation is the way we're going to have to go. But I'm really worried that this may not be successful. The park and ride is a fine idea, but my idea of riding a bus is being able to hop on at a stop and not have to drive to a park and ride. And then take it straight into Madison. So if I, you know, my husband and I used to do go to the East Side Transfer Point and take the bus there, but that park and ride has depleted. The parking in there is so bad now, and there's so many potholes, we stopped doing that. So, but I just thought I'd bring that up, and thank you very much for allowing me to speak to you guys.
If I, I asked Tom, and it turns out that the person who drew it negotiates with from Sun Prairie is here. Could you stand up and introduce yourself?
I'm Phil Gritzmacher. I'm a city planner for Sun Prairie.
Okay, thank you.
So I'm hoping that you can communicate with him. He's obviously heard your story right now.
Okay.
But I think the our group is sort of sitting inside of Madison, and I think the Sun Prairie people sort of need to talk with the Sun Prairie people.
Okay, sounds good.
I thought we're not interested in what you said, but I think that's the next step for you.
Okay, so thank you very much.
Okay, next we have Sarah White, and after that is Sarah Is it Bocher, B-O-C-H-E-R? So you'll be next up after Sarah White. So Sarah White is up next.
Well, again, my name is Sarah White, and a big thank you for all you guys do. And already, I put general thoughts down because I didn't really have a support or against. I have a couple of things I want you to continue to think about when you make your decisions, whether you're in Madison or Sun Prairie. And the reason I mention that, as somebody who relies on the bus, having living with active epilepsy my entire life, it limits my ability in terms of job searching, and also having my mild case of cerebral palsy. And I want you, as you are making your decisions, to recognize that I'm not alone. There are a lot of people who probably aren't here in this room. And I just want you to understand that I live adjacent to this building and those apartments over there. And I'm currently job searching. But yeah, I have to, and I just want you to understand that I'm not the alone person, and that I just want you to keep doing a wonderful job, and to a big thank you, because you also deserve a huge thank you for what you do, because I know nothing you do is like a penny, just pennies. It is a lot of money. Mm-hmm. And just another big thank you. But just to keep little things like that in mind when you make your decisions for stops and how, as Susan mentioned, how accessible they are. Mm-hmm. Taking them, for instance, one off, putting it on Cottage Grove, as opposed to in the neighborhood, is making it less accessible for certain people because you're having them walk further. I used an example of 38 that just happened recently, but that was what first came to mind. But just or taking it off the mentioning one off the square. I mean, it's little things like that that are affecting people. So another big thank you to you. And I'm going to shut up. But a big thank you to you and to our fellow community members. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Next we have Sarah. Is it Bocher? Am I close to right with that? And then next up would be Jonathan Mertzig.
All right. I have a written statement here. Committee members, thank you for allowing me to speak to you tonight. I have used the Madison Metro Transit for 3 to 4 years. Before I moved to Madison, I learned how to navigate Madison using the bus system. The service that the Madison Metro Transit provides was a key factor in my decision to move here. Using mass transit is something I do out of necessity. As an individual with multiple disabilities on a fixed income, I need access to affordable and convenient transportation. Madison Metro Transit provides that. I am in favor of the new route to Sun Prairie. I am against the elimination of Route 39 and reconfiguration of 31. The new route to Sun Prairie is a good opportunity for connecting a nearby city with public transit. I enjoy the thought that I will have more options for dining, shopping, entertainment in Sun Prairie and the east side of Madison. For 2 years, I've been employed by a state agency on the far southeast side of Wisconsin, that's DATCAP. To get to work, I walk up a quarter-mile hill. Due to my mobility issues, busing in winter can be more difficult. I'm not sure if the Vondren at DATCAP driveway stop will be affected by the Route 31 changes, but I hope it is not, for at least I know that 4 people, when I'm riding, approximately, use that stop to get to work. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Next, we have Jonathan Mertzig, and then Bruce Powers would be next.
Hi, my name is Jonathan Mertzig. I'm a resident of the Midvale Heights neighborhood and a regular commuter on Route 55 to Epic. So starting off on that topic, just wanted to speak in favor of the relatively minor tweak to Route 6, but it means a lot to a lot of the regular users of that Route 55. When we made changes to that route a couple of years back to kind of improve the overall service quality, the folks who use Route 6 to transfer to 55 kind of got the short end of the stick. Most of the changes to that route were relatively positively received, but they encountered a lot of difficulties with transfers. Since I'm kind of interested in transit issues, a lot of my coworkers ended up bugging me about, you know, hey, how do we fix this? And so I told them to send feedback to Metro. Apparently, Metro listened. So I'm glad to see that Metro responded to the feedback that those folks sent in. Also, personally, I appreciate that that change makes it easier to get to various civic functions in the neighborhood at Sequoia Library after work. So I very much appreciate that. Hopefully, minor uncontroversial tweak to the schedule. In terms of other topics, Route 11, I am very torn in regard to the changes there. On one hand, the changes on the west side of the route are a significant improvement to access to service in my immediate vicinity. The new routing runs about two blocks from my home, adding an additional option for folks who are commuting back and forth to downtown and campus area. But the elimination of service to the square is kind of perplexing, considering that's sort of a major employment area, and also sort of a natural transfer point, not really designated officially as a transfer point, but it is a convenient location to connect to a lot of other services if you're traveling beyond the downtown area. So I would really encourage some critical analysis of that sort of truncation of the route to avoid the Capitol Square area. I think Susan really outlined a lot of other more detailed concerns with that. In terms of the stop elimination on East Washington, I understand the concern about safety with that crossing, but also looking at a stop that has 20 boardings, that's not an insignificant number, and it's in a neighborhood that's getting increasing density of development, so I would imagine that number potentially would go up over time. And we're seeing sort of a trend that sort of what you could call hot neighborhoods in Madison, like the Monroe Street corridor being another example, have seen a significant reduction in stops and significant increase in spacing between stops. And in general, I find that concerning, especially because for people with disabilities, elderly, increasing that spacing, especially in winter, makes it very challenging to get to those stops in a timely manner. You know, maybe the safety concern there kind of is the overriding factor in closing that stop, but really I'm very skeptical about the need to really fully eliminate that stop. One final point, Route 34, the overall restructuring of those routes I don't have a big concern with, but one thing that stuck out like a sore thumb there was the effect on riders going to MATC. I personally am a continuing education student taking night classes at MATC, and I've noticed how it is extremely difficult to get to most of MATC's facilities via mass transit as is. Anything that makes that more difficult is possibly a make or break thing for people's access to getting to classes. For me personally, like, there is just one exact bus timing that let me get to a class, and if that wasn't available, I just couldn't take it. And so I'm afraid that when you make a change that substantially increases travel time, adds transfers, you're potentially actually eliminating educational opportunities for people. Just keep that in mind when you're sort of adding barriers there in terms of access on those routes. One thing I'd like to suggest, though, is I know that with the sort of reshuffling of locations that MATC has going on right now, they're also restructuring a lot of their own shuttle services, and perhaps there's an opportunity to work with MATC to add a sort of supplementary leg of their shuttle service to the East Transfer Point to possibly make up for that loss of service. So that might be something to consider. I guess if I still have time, I'm very excited about the addition of service to Sun Prairie. I'm glad someone mentioned that, hey, it doesn't go downtown. That would be nice if it did, because I'd love to be able to take the bus to downtown Sun Prairie. But I'd also love to see an expansion of all-day service, not just commuter service. Sun Prairie is really evolving into a major regional shopping and services hub, and it would be nice to be able to take the bus there. So, yeah, thank you very much.
Thank you. Can I ask a question?
Sure.
So, really, not trying to be snarky, but given that 11
you sort of, in order to do the one thing, let's just assume that they'd say you have to do the other, which is, if you're sort of representing Midvale Heights area, where do you go with that? Because that's, I think that's the decision we're going to be faced in a month.
Yeah, it is a tough choice. I would be in favor of leaning towards making the changes on the west side to increase access to the residential neighborhoods there.
And then working on transfer, making it clear how you transfer to get down to the square. Okay.
Yeah, if there were mitigating measures to make those transfers easier to get to the square, like guaranteeing that you could get that transfer, I'd be a little more confident about that change.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Okay. Next we have Bruce Powers, and next up after Bruce would be Rich Zietko.
Zico?
I'm terrible with names, sorry. I apologized ahead of time, and I apologize again. So do the best I can.
I want to thank you for this meeting. I think it's important to get the community involved. I'm excited for bus number 23. I don't know South Prairie all that well. I know Main Street, Bird, and Bristol, the main exits, but I do know there's a Woodman's out there now. Now, how close is this bus route going to be to, like, Woodman's or the movie theater that's out in South Prairie? Pretty close?
Is Drew still here? Back there, can you speak to that? Can you come to the, would you mind coming to the table and speaking into the microphone? Thank you so much.
So it'll have a stop at Costco, and then it'll kind of loop around, take a left onto Legacy, and go down Blue Aster. The stop closest to Woodman's would be in front of Menards. Yeah, there'll be a stop on Grand in front of Menards, but not one by Woodman's.
Okay, great. All right. I know changes are never easy, especially with the economic times. It's all about give and take, you know, and I just want to thank you for all you do. Some of the changes are great, 99% of them, but we all have to make, you know, tough decisions, economic times. It's all about money, you know, and I just want to thank Madison Mucker for all what they do. Thanks.
Thank you.
Can you just say your name for the record? We've been referring to you as the Sun Prairie guy.
I'm Philip Gritzmacher. I'm a city planner with Sun Prairie.
Thanks.
Thank you, and thank you for coming tonight. Next, we have Rich Zico, and after Rich would be Michael Goodman.
Howdy. My name is Rich Zico. I've been a resident for 20 years.
Can you speak into the microphone, please?
Certainly.
Go ahead and sit down, if you would. Because otherwise it won't show up on the film.
Okay. So my name is Rich Zietko. I've lived in Madison for 20 years now. One of the things that really caught in my mind just recently was the crossing East Wash to get to the bus stop when we're talking about Dickinson Street. It's already a dangerous corridor. There's a problem of overdevelopment on East Washington Avenue, and I hope that Madison Metro could actually work with the city council in addressing that so that maybe future developments could have bus passes for people rather than cars. So that's just a quick little aside. I'm here basically to speak about Route 6, maybe longer service hours. I'm not necessarily concerned about the detours there, but my wife is a resident of Madison since 1988. She doesn't drive, never driven, relies on the buses. She works at Whole Foods, which sometimes she has hours which go beyond bus hours. And I think that's, as a social worker myself, a lot of my clients have experienced that themselves. If they get a second shift job or third shift job, either getting there or back becomes a problem. Hours, I think, could be expanded, maybe a San Francisco model where you have outer routes and some inner routes that are going around that allow for 24-hour service. It doesn't have to be every, you know, certain hours, but it could be once an hour, but will still help people. To do that, maybe having also staggered stops for some of the routes, especially with common routes versus, you know, stopping at every one where the 57, the 37, the 4, the 6 all stop at the same spot, maybe stagger them out a little bit so that people can transfer. Um, So the better coverage, the 24/7, you know, having expanded bus things, regional transportation is the other key point. The Sun Prairie, I liked and originally looked like it was going to be going downtown to at least like Linerud or so. I spoke to the Sun Prairie man and I didn't catch his name. He said it's just going to the new Sun Prairie, which is kind of nice. I'd like to go to movies and do things there, but I would also like to do that. And I'd also like, you know, for folks that have the opportunity to work in Sun Prairie, to work in Stoughton, to work in maybe in DeForest, to have more dialogue created for a regional transportation network. The bus rapid transit on East Washington, once going back to the whole crossing the street kind of thing and the overdevelopment, if we're putting more cars on East Washington, that's going to really affect bus rapid transit negatively. You know, it's going to be where do we put everything? So those are the things. Regional transportation we really need. Expanded hours we really need. And also handicap accessibility is a key factor. So that's what I have to say, and I hope I've got everything. Thank you.
Next, we have Michael Goodman, and after that would be Tariq Sackoff. I'm not sure I'm saying that correctly, who's representing City of Madison Neighborhood Resource Team.
Yes, my name is Mike Goodman. I just have a few comments. They're mostly in support of at least some of the proposed changes. As far as Route 23, I think a service to Sun Prairie is long overdue, but I share the concern of some of the Sun Prairie residents that have already spoken that the proposed route doesn't really serve a lot of Sun Prairie. It's left out just from a quick look at a map. I realized that, although I don't live in Sun Prairie, but I think that it would be advantageous to have better service through a greater portion of the city of Sun Prairie. Route 26, I'm generally in favor of the schedule adjusting. I just think that you should remember when you tweak the schedule that, for example, when I use Route 26, I usually use it in conjunction with Route 20 in getting to East Town. And at peak periods in the afternoon, sometimes there are delays on Route 20, and that often causes me to miss the connecting with the transfer bus at East Town onto the 26, and that can require a wait of half an hour if a bus is missed. So I'm just asking that when the schedule is adjusted, if that could be taken into consideration so that it would be easier to transfer to the 26 from other routes. Route 29, I think it's a great idea to have it running along Sherman, but of course that's because I live near Sherman Avenue, but so I think it's an excellent idea. I also think it's a good idea to have a bus that's going through the north side, yet without being dependent on the north transfer point. I think without having to pass through that, I think that's a great idea. And I guess finally, as far as the 31, 34, and 39, generally I'm in favor of that. I think that it is important to have better access to Dutch Mill. As was mentioned here, the funny thing is that it's easier during off-peak hours to get to Dutch Mill than it is during regular business hours. I think better access to Dutch Mill is important because many, in addition to the inner city buses, many nonprofit groups like to have their members meet a chartered bus there. I guess some of the companies with the large parking lots within the city are discouraging the use of their property as meeting points for chartered buses. So I think it's important to facilitate and improve the access to Dutch Mill. Okay, that's all I've got. Thank you.
Thank you. Next we have Tariq Sackoff. I'm probably not saying that even close to correct. And after that would be Ranisha Strozler. Hopefully I've got that even close. Thank you.
evening, so it's hard.
And I should mention that it says here that you're representing the City of Madison Neighborhood Resource Team. Is that correct?
Indeed, yeah. Mm-hmm. So Tariq Sakoff and I work in the mayor's office and coordinate neighborhood resource teams for the city. And so folks who might not be aware, neighborhood resource teams are one of the ways in which really focus on racial equity and inclusion within neighborhoods, really make sure that we get out there in certain areas of the city where we tend to see high concentrations of people of color, people living with lower incomes, people that are a little bit more disconnected from systems of power. And so what we do is make sure that we tune in to what's important to folks, talk to people, make sure we understand what are the needs, issues, and priorities of people living in these areas, and then elevate that up. So it was interesting to me, and we have one for Owl Creek. So that's what brings me here tonight in terms of looking at Route 31, 34, and 39. So it was interesting to me walking up to the meeting tonight and seeing the packet, and the first thing that says right up at the top is the equity analysis. And so that was new to me, realizing that as part of the federal requirements, Title VI, that there's supposed to be an equity analysis that's done as part of all of these projects. And I think it kind of underscores some of the irony within this. So are folks familiar with the racial equity and social justice initiative that the City of Madison has? Okay. So there's a racial equity analysis that we developed through that. And basically it translates into really making sure that we're incorporating and looking directly at populations of color, people that are living with lower incomes, making sure that we're incorporating the voices of people that are going to be affected by the decisions, thinking systematically through what might the unintended consequences be, who is this change going to work for, and who does it not work for. So I appreciate all the work that my colleagues in Metro do. There's a lot to try and figure out, and the intention behind the proposal is it makes a lot of sense in kind of looking at it from a certain lens. You're getting all of a sudden full service throughout the whole day to an area where there's only, you know, limited service. I mean, we got that big gap. Except if we go back further, the genesis of Route 31 to begin with was students, kids that lived in Owl Creek, who didn't have a way to be able to get to school outside of those hours when the school bus ran. They couldn't get home. They couldn't work in jobs. They couldn't do all sorts of things. I worked for a long time running youth employment programs. Every time we saw a kid that was living in Owl Creek, we were just like, oh, no, because the transportation options were so limited. So these kids went to town. They came together, they organized, they pulled together, you know, the people that they could collaborate with. They worked with the neighborhood resource team to get this bus started and in the city budget, and it was one of the coolest things that we saw for a long time. And it was one of the prime examples of what racial equity and inclusion actually looks like before we had the Racial Equity and Social Justice Initiative at all. But these kids went out, did their thing, and Metro did some great work by starting this route. And now we're pulling it from them. And so those stops that are getting taken away are the stops at Senate and La Follette, Senate Middle School, La Follette High School. And I know that it comes along with this other story about expanding service, that they're not actually losing service. But if we look at the routes and the way that works for folks of color oftentimes, who are the folks that are taking the most transfers within our systems? Who are the ones that have the longest transit times? And so there's always a way to get somewhere if you're willing to take a long enough time to get there, if you're able to make as many transfers as it might need to take to get there. But that direct, straight shot to something, that luxury of being able to just get on the bus and go, is something that a lot of times folks with, well, more limited forms of capital end up missing out on. And so I think one of the things that's come up this evening is Metro talking about that this isn't a recommendation, it's a proposal. I wish it was something that had slowed down and not actually gotten to this stage quite yet so that there was the opportunity to actually have some of the conversations really with the folks that might potentially be using it. We really want to make sure that we're going out and talking to the kids at Senate and La Follette that live in Owl Creek, talking to the families in Owl Creek, the ones that are going to be most directly affected by this, and showing them the options and saying, well, okay, so it's either what you got now, or it's the full day service, but that means you got to add on another 30 minutes. And this isn't even bringing in to, you know, the aspect of Madison College and how all of that kind of ties in. That's another really high needs group. And so on the one hand, it's nice to think about, we got a new library coming up, which isn't going to open up for quite a while yet. anyway, but like anticipating a need, the part to me that gets the expression that comes up a lot is robbing Peter to pay Paul. Why the hell are we robbing anyone? You know, like that's the bottom line within this. So we know with Metro, we want to do a little bit more work to actually have some of those conversations that sound like my time. But I'd heavily, heavily urge us to kind of pause on this one and see what people actually say. Thanks.
I'm sure the folks from Metro will be in touch if they have other things they want to talk to you about. Yeah. Great. Next we have, I'm probably saying this horribly, Ranisha Strozler. Can you tell me how to say your name when you come up here? Okay, great. I didn't do too badly on that one. And next will be Nicole Maxwell. Oh, she says she didn't want to speak. So I think we're done with the people who want to speak. And we'll finish up here, and I'll tell everybody their positions. Thank you.
So I'll introduce myself again. I'm Ronisha Strozier, and I've been in Madison the last almost 3 years. I work at DATCAP as well. For those who don't know, Wisconsin Department of Agriculture, Trade, and Consumer Protection. And I'm very concerned about the changes to Route 31, 34, and 39. Where I live at currently, I chose to stay based on the bus route and how long it would take me to get to work. I used to live off of Fordham Avenue, and I hated the transfer point because sometimes I would miss my bus if my earlier bus was late. And then it became a point where I just didn't want to do it in the morning, so I started using rideshare to supplement. Right now, I carpool in the morning and I catch the bus home, but it's nice to have the one-stop shop now that I have. I will be losing my bus stop at Flom and Alder due to this change. And so since I will be losing my bus stop, I now need to consider if I have the budget to purchase a car or to continue to do ride share or find a carpool to deal with that. I'm also concerned about the access that citizens have to DATCAP. As a woman spoke earlier, we do have a very steep hill at DATCAP. I heard years ago that the bus went up there, but for some reason they cut the route and now you have to walk down the hill. But I'm concerned that those with disabilities or even just average citizens are prevented from coming to the place that's supposed to protect their consumer protection because of that hill. And so I think that is a misnomer that the bus doesn't go to that place, or not a misnomer, but just it's just odd. Travel time. So maybe I could still catch the 16, but now I'm going back to the transfer point, and that's adding a transfer and increasing my time on the bus, which is why I moved to my specific location. So it doesn't really work in my benefit. I'm concerned about the Senate and La Follette students. I'm not a parent, but those kids use those bus stops a lot. And I see them when I get off the bus because we share the same bus stop. I don't think it's a good idea to take these bus stops from these kids. They have access to bike lanes on Monona Drive from this bus stop. I would also like to question whether the PTSA was brought this idea of moving the bus stops or change to the bus schedules, or whether the high school and middle school administrators were contacted to see what the impact would be on these students and their families. Also, I'd like to bring up the fact of in the winter, a lot of the bus stops are not shoveled very well, and so you end up standing in a snow pile or in the street. I use a flashlight a lot of times to wave down my bus driver just to let him know if it's nighttime that I'm there and I don't want to get hit or missed. And my final comment is regarding East Washington at Dickinson. I would like to ask you to work with the city to do traffic calming or provide a place for people to be able to walk to those bus stops. And I would like to ask that you consider the increase in walking time that people will have when they eliminate these routes. Because, once again, we're thinking about folks with disabilities, and the difference of 5 minutes could be, well, I just go ride or I'll just catch Uber or Lyft, and that money is leaving Metro. Thank you, and no further comments.
Hey, I also have two additional people. We have one, a late registration, Monica Lowry, who wishes to speak. Thank you.
Yes,
guess I'm here to say I oppose the 31, 34, and 39 change, specifically the direct access from the transfer point to MATC. It's very important. It's a make-or-break decision for a lot of kids on the east side, Buckeye area, and specifically my child specifically has autism. Took a lot of time to get him to be able to ride that bus, take that direct line from east, transfer to MATC. He just came home last week, told me I'm losing that. It's a big deal in our family having that direct access from Buckeye Road to MATC. 31, 34, 39, I truly think needs to be relooked at for access for students to get to the schools and not put more time on them. That's it. Thank you for your time.
Okay. Mick, we have one more? Okay. Well, I'll read these, and while you're finishing filling that out, we have Nicole Maxwell, who registered in support, did not wish to speak, but said we're interested in the Sun Prairie routes and general expansion of regional public transit in Dane County. Also, the team accompanying me is studying government this year, so this is a great opportunity to see it function, so I appreciate that feedback. And also, David Price, registered in support, did not wish to speak.
She changed her mind.
Oh, okay. Did we miss anybody who has another blue form someplace that wants to speak? Okay, a lot of great feedback. So comments from the group. Grant?
Yeah, thank you. Kind of just two comments. One related to the Dickinson stop. As I was understanding it, the primary motivation is the safety concerns with crossing East Washington at Dickinson. And I, at the Ped Bike Motor Vehicle Commission, one of the future items that was recommended for review was a sort of East Washington review, particularly around pedestrian crossings, that it is such a barrier, and with all the increased development there, really wanting to look at how we can improve pedestrian crossings of that corridor, especially on the isthmus. So I think from an overall transportation perspective, I would be much more interested in looking to see what we could do to improve pedestrian crossings at that rather than writing it off and saying we don't want to encourage people to cross there by having a transit stop. One more sort of to put a point on it, when we had the significant flooding this last year and we had a complete closure of the shared use path along the river, and we absolutely have to rely on or had to rely on Dickinson for that alternate route. And so, again, I just think that kind of trying to not use Dickinson as a place for pedestrians to cross is maybe not the right approach there if that's the prime motivation for that change. And then my other comment is really around the 31, 34, 39. And, clearly there's a lot of feedback, and I'm sure Metro is hearing all of that. I had a number of concerns around especially the MATC access when I first saw it. One thing that I would maybe ask is for staff to reach out to the East Madison Community Center as well. I think as part of the equity analysis, I didn't see that in here and I didn't see any comments from there, but when I was out a week or two ago, I did get concern from staff there about the impact for those residents. Obviously, a lot of transit-dependent folks living there as well. So I think that would be a helpful thing to do over the next month as well.
Other comments from people? Certainly we have a lot of time before this will be taken up again for decisions to be made. So there's additional time to get feedback. And Metro is very interested in getting everybody's feedback and taking everything into consideration. Gary?
Just a question.
Sure.
We have scheduled two meetings in May, and I assume this would be at the second meeting in May?
That's what I had it down for the first, but Chuck indicated he wanted to wait till the second. I like the idea of the second meeting in May because that gives people a month, basically, to digest and to get additional feedback. Drew? Does that work?
Yes. Is it possible, though, I'm going to push your slog button, if you do some brainstorming in the next 13 days Can you bring some of that, not that we're going to make a decision at the first meeting in May, but just sort of like you say, oh, wow, you know, here's a new way of doing Owl Creek that meets some of these things, and here's where we're going to shave a corner or something like that. I'd rather hear it or see it 2 weeks from now rather than wait until the last.
Yeah,
yeah. Okay.
Yeah, we can do that.
Okay, so I'll tentatively mark the notes that we'd have a discussion only potentially at the May 8th meeting and then have it scheduled for decision at the May 22nd meeting.
I have one question. At the next meeting when this is brought up for discussion, I would appreciate it if on the agenda to speak and offer the city perspective if Tariq from the mayor's office could offer feedback at that meeting after talking with Metro.
About yeah, so I think that would be very helpful. So did he leave?
I asked if for the next meeting that we bring this up, if you could be on the agenda.
So yeah.
You could relay what your findings are, what your opinion is.
Can I ask one more thing?
Does that work for you, that May 8th meeting, or could you let us know?
Yeah, I'm absolutely happy to be here. I don't know how many additional conversations we're going to be able to have. I mean, we'll certainly get going.
Uh-huh.
But yeah, I'm happy to be here.
That would be great.
Did you have something, Ken? Yeah. Along that line, for Drew, you know, I know it's a good idea to try to get all this stuff so that when we put out the scheduling and all that, it all takes place at the same time. But if there's a couple of these items that we are thinking maybe a little extra time of brainstorming and communicating with people, whether it's MATC people or Owl Creek, it's not a make or break that we have to have this in place in August. It's nice to have it in place in August, but is it possible that we could take a little longer on making some of these decisions?
Yeah, how does the timing work on that, Drew?
Well, the thing is we tend to make our big kind of changes like on this order once a year in August.
Right.
Just because all the data development and the whole process just takes – time. And the nice thing about doing it in August is also it's kind of before schools are back in session, and so if people haven't necessarily developed all their commuting patterns yet or anything, if you try to do it in the middle of the year, you know, the person in December was taking one bus to get to wherever they're going, and now they're going to have to take another and
transfer. Okay, I understand.
I mean, it's not to say it can't be delayed, but it's usually a We try to get it.
So we'll have to take that into consideration 4 weeks from now as far as does it look like we can come up with a better project if we wait, or should we just make the decision?
Exactly.
Okay.
So, but I think it will be helpful if we have it as a discussion only at the next meeting. Maybe we can, you know, help move the discussions along and provide. It'll give us an opportunity. There was some additional feedback tonight that we just received that we hadn't seen before. We heard from the public tonight, so that'll give us some other things to think about.
Well, I'm sort of saying that in context then of the person from the mayor's office in the neighborhood section.
Mm-hmm.
It's best, we should assume that we're going to make a decision about Owl Creek at the second May meeting,
mm-hmm.
as opposed to saying we have a longer time frame to get the feedback. We need to get that feedback, as much feedback as we can, within the next mm-hmm. 27 days.
Right.
Okay.
So maybe you guys can touch base on that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Any other comments in this regard, Grant?
Can you add Rescue Terrace to outreach as well on that 34 change?
Yeah.
That'd be another, I think, good part of that, the rescue analysis as well.
I'm sorry, the first name?
But Rescue Terrace, so the Housing First, right off of that route.
Yep, gotcha.
Okay, any other comments? Okay, now I know you guys had a time commitment, and if both of you leave, we'll lose our quorum. So.
You want to go?
So at this point, unless there's anything
motion
else.
Motion to close the hearing.
Okay. We have a motion to close the public hearing. I don't know if we need a motion or not, but. Second. Okay. So. I don't think we need a motion, but.
Yeah.
Everybody in favor of closing the public hearing?
Aye.
Aye. Okay. We're closed. Public hearing is officially closed. I don't think we need a motion, but. We have a quorum now, but I don't know. Do you both need to? Okay, thank you so much. I appreciate it.
And I've either seen the tip or I'll watch it.
Okay.
Oh, yeah, that's right. It's old stuff.
Okay, so next on the agenda, we have the transportation improvement review.
Chris.
I think, is this a little version of that?
Yeah, there you go. Yeah. Do you want a big version, anybody?
We're into micro, Chris. We're into micro.
I don't need it. I'll get my, if I need to read it, I'll get my.
Okay. Would you guys mind stepping outside? Thank you so much.
Okay. The tip.
Okay, transportation improvement review.
I'm going to miss the May 22nd.
And Mike, thanks for staying.
So thanks for having me. My name is Chris Petikowski with City Engineering. One of the things that we do each year is go around to various committees and try to get feedback on our transportation improvement program. That is a listing of projects that we have kind of on our radar, major projects, bike projects, for the next 5 to 6 years, and a few in this spreadsheet that are currently being thought of but not currently programmed as well. Ultimately, this helps shape our engineering's budget request when we have to turn in our budget request in May to the mayor. So what we do is go around to the various committees, get feedback on some of the on the tip and the projects. And what I'm going to go through here is kind of a highlight of the more some of the more major or noteworthy projects. The list that you have in your packets include our major streets budget projects that are either proposed to be funded or ones that we're kind of watching and not scheduled. We also have a spreadsheet in there called the Ped Bike, which is all our pedestrian and bicycle projects that are proposed as well. So, I gotta start the slideshow here. Okay, so how does the project get into the city's budget? There's a number of different ways. Safety is one way. If there's a known crash issue or safety issue, pedestrian crossing issue, that's a common way. I'd say the most common way with our projects are a deteriorated pavement condition. So we rate our streets each year, or actually every other year. And so we do half the streets each year on a scale from 0 to 10 and try to keep track of the pavement conditions and try to keep ahead of those pavement conditions. So that is a very the most common way that a project gets into the budget is the pavement is starting to deteriorate and we need to fix it. A number of other ways, known pedestrian and bicycle improvements, a bridge that's been deteriorating, utility infrastructure is common in the downtown. We've got a lot of water mains that are 100 years old, a lot of sewer mains that are 100 years old, and sometimes they're failing so much that we just have to get at a project. Sometimes we work with adjacent municipalities and developers to fit in projects that usually are in accordance with our neighborhood plans. And lastly, more lesser common way is roadway congestion. So I'm just going to kind of jump into some of the major projects. I didn't put them all. I wanted to kind of give you guys an abbreviated version because I know you guys are busy and covering a lot of things. So I'll kind of shoot through a couple of the major projects here, starting with the ones that are scheduled next year in 2020. So this is Gammon Road and the Westtown Pass. We are going to be, reconstructing Gammon Road along the Westtown Mall. So from Mineral Point Road to the Beltline. We're also with that project going to be extending the Westtown Path. So currently the Westtown Path exists from Whitney Way over to Grand Canyon here, and there's a crossing under the Beltline at Strux Street. We're going to be continuing that Westtown Path with this project, ultimately to get it all the way over to Junction Road. But this will be one of the first phases here, going from Grand Canyon to Mineral Point and actually underneath Mineral Point in a new tunnel. Those of you familiar with Gammon, six lanes, a lot of traffic. This will be a nice way for peds and bikes to get across and get to the Westtown Mall area and ultimately over to the, our goal is to get the Westtown Path linked up to the Research Park on the west side. Also planned in 2020 is Cottage Grove Road reconstruction. This is on the far east side, so here is I-39, Cottage Grove Road. So we're planning to reconstruct from North Star to Sprecher in 2020. Both these projects, Gammon, the Westtown Path, and Cottage Grove Road, are federally funded projects. So we applied for funds with the MPO, were awarded that, and the federal funds cover 60% of the costs of these projects.
Is that expansion?
This would be going from 2 to 4 lanes with buffered bike lanes and sidewalks on both sides, yeah. And a median. In the downtown area, we've got a few projects scheduled here around the Judge Darrell Square area. The streets we've been kind of working on the outer loop projects for the last 10 years, and there's two blocks left on Doty here from MLK to King. Also, the block of Pinckney in between Doty and Main, or I'm sorry, Doty and Wilson, and then the two blocks of Wilson here from MLK to King. So these projects, we're all kind of waiting for the Judge Darrell Square project to end, and as that development completes, we're planning to get in there and reconstruct those streets as well, and that's kind of part of the stuff that Gretchen and Tom were talking about as far as that Wilson corridor, getting it ready for that Judge Darrell Square job to complete. And this shows the West Wilson block that's actually scheduled this year that we talked about earlier, the 300 block. We also have a project underway right now, Wilson and Williamson Street, reconstructing that pavement. That was some of the worst pavement in the city. That's a good example of a pavement rating driving a street. We had to get that project done ASAP because the pavement was really rough. It was actually rated a three, yeah. And Blair Street is not far behind, and that is a joint project we're working on with WISDOT. We applied for safety funds for the intersection. So some of you might be familiar with our John Nolan Corridor study we wrapped up a year ago that are implementing a new intersection design there. So part of that is getting built this year in 2019. That was a case where the city streets could not wait until 2022 when we can get the state on board, so we had to get at that pavement a little sooner. So now we're a little bit further out, 2021. We have University Avenue planned from Shorewood Boulevard to University Bay Drive. This is a joint project with the Village of Shorewood Hills. Currently underway, we got a PIM scheduled in May. Looking at possibly completing missing sidewalk links on the north side there, and replacing all the pavements, working with Tom's team on trying to make sure that it's ready for the BRT route when that comes online in a couple years, as well as we're also taking a look at potentially looking at an underpass or overpass for the campus drive path that crosses at University Bay Drive here. This project also, we applied for MPO federal funds, were awarded, and we'll be getting 60% funds for that. This project also has a major stormwater component. There's a lot of flooding in this area, and we're hoping to try to alleviate a lot of that flooding with the project with a large storm sewer in the street. Garber Path, this is a project we applied for TAP funds. That's also another federal a program that assists with, it's called the Transportation Alternatives Program, where you can apply for some pedestrian and bicycle projects. We were awarded funds for this Garber Path. So that is this stretch here along the Garber site on the north side of the Cap City Trail here. And a new bridge crossing Starkweather Creek here at Dawes Street, and extending a new path up to Milwaukee Street, and hopefully in the future extending that up Starkweather Creek and beyond. We'll be replacing the bridge also at Ivy Street here that currently exists. So it's a nice little project that we're hoping will expand a lot of the connections to the Cap City Trail from these neighborhoods. Park Streets, there's a couple of things going on Park Street. This summer, we're going to be working on joint repairs of the concrete in the northbound lanes from Badger up to the railroad here and from Olin up to West Washington. So we'll be working on those northbound concrete joints, doing a quick joint repair, not a full resurface or anything, but just to get another 10 to 15 years of life out of that concrete pavement. In 2 years, we plan to do the southbound lanes as well. We kind of worked with traffic engineering staff and some of the needs out there. The northbound lanes are in a lot worse shape than the southbound lanes for some reason. They just didn't last as long. Different pours back in the 80s, but we'll be, as I mentioned, affecting northbound traffic this year, but not southbound traffic. We also have a stretch in between here in purple that we're working with WISDOT to try to get them to program a reconstruct. That pavement has actually been overlaid already with asphalt twice, and it's starting to break up again. It's a little bit further on in its degradation, and we feel that it needs to be reconstructed at this point. So we're working with the state, since that's Route 151, to try to get them to program that. The city is in charge of doing maintenance items like joint repairs, so we're taking the lead on those red portions. But for the reconstruct, we really need to work with the state and have them program that. Atwood Avenue, another project that we're hoping to have federally funded. This is a reconstruct from Fair Oaks here all the way to Cottage Grove Road, joint project with City of Monona. Have made a lot of good progress on that, have our geometry approved, have a really nice project that's going to really enhance the ped and bike facilities out there, and as well as the lake loop connections. So we have a cycle track on the south side of Atwood, and then up south side of Atwood here, up Walter Street to kind of connect with that lake loop, as well as bike lanes from Walter down to Cottage Grove Road. So really nice project. We're getting ready in the case that federal funds would be available sooner, but if not, it would be likely in 23 or 24. John Nolan Drive is a project we're just beginning to program, so now we're kind of getting a little bit later in the tip here. This is a 2024 proposed project, maybe could expand into 2 years. We got six bridges out there. Those are the circle. So there's three northbound bridges and three southbound bridges. All six are getting near the end of their service life, and we're trying to begin the program their replacement, as well as that pavement has got about two to three to four maybe years left on it. So beginning to look at that pavement replacement as well as some enhancements of the bike path along there. On other segments, we've been widening that so that there's not only a lane in each direction, but also a separate area for sidewalk for pedestrians. We'd like to implement that with this project, and also fix the shoreline that's been eroding away. So that's planned out in 2024. This would be one of our MPO requests this time around. So right now the MPO has programmed through 2022. The next, in June, they'll be taking requests for projects for 23 and 24, and this would be one of our requests, proposed requests. Troy Drive Underpass, this is a, if people are familiar with this, there's a Troy Drive, there is a railroad bridge over Troy Drive. The north sidewalk has kind of an old, dark, and damp culvert that is not very inviting for pedestrians to use, not lit very well. It's
actually intimidating to use if you've ever gone through it.
It's a corrugated metal pipe. That
I think they put the pipe in after to reinforce falling stuff.
Perhaps. Yeah. I'm not sure about the...
I'm pretty sure that's how it went. And the regular road, you can go like this. I mean, it's one of those roads that you see in England, you know, where really should only have one vehicle in at a time.
So we had in the past applied with the MPO to try to actually rebuild that entire bridge. It didn't score very well. It's quite costly, and it's actually a railroad infrastructure, and I think that was part of the reason why it didn't score so well. You know, it's us kind of building their structure for them. So what we're proposing to do now is to take that culvert, that pedestrian-owned culvert, and replace that with a typical underpass that you see in the city that's nice, 14 foot wide, 9 or 10 feet tall, well lit, well drained, and very visible through there. So what we're proposing is to replace that that pedestrian culvert with a more traditional ped bike underpass.
Chris, so you would just do the pedestrian side, not the traffic side?
Not the street, yeah.
Because that's a wonderful speed bump right now. Everybody, that's the only time people actually go the speed limit on Troy.
Yeah, it is pretty tight. Yeah, according to the railroad, you know, they have to inspect their bridges just like we do. They're not programming that for reconstruction for any time soon. So we'll go ahead and try to take care of the part that we can take care of. Autumn Ridge Path is another path connection that we are pursuing on the northeast side. So right now, if you're familiar with my previous slide with that Garver path, I'll just shoot back here. So we got the Cap City path running along this way. We have our proposed path and new bridge here at Starkweather. Dawes Street here is a very bikeable, nice connection, nice bikeable street. So if you think about that moving to the east as we get to our Autumn Ridge path, Dawes Street extends over here. Right, currently there's a park path right here. There's also a bridge over Highway 51 here, and Portland Parkway, also a very nice bikeable street. So what we're proposing to do here is continue a new path through High Stand Park and through the neighborhood here, and a new path and a new bridge over Commercial Avenue. So what this does now is kind of connects all this neighborhood here with this barrier, getting over this barrier on a new bridge over 30, all through a park and neighborhood, through bikeable streets on an existing path, and then connecting into the Calf City Path. So it kind of this project helps us kind of connect these neighborhoods and these neighborhoods into the Calf City Path. So what we're proposing out in the future, 2025, this would be a project that we've begun the design on, and we would probably apply for TAP funds in a future year, similar to the Garber Path. So proposing in 2025 right now. Also, a little further out, Pleasant View Road. This is now far west side. Joint project with City of Middleton underway is this 2023 section. That is going to be an ask of the MPO in this 23 and 24 time frame by City of Middleton. We have a portion of that, the southern stretch here to Old Sauk Road, where we'd be replacing Pleasant View with a four-lane boulevard and sidewalks and a multi-use path. Also,
we saw the geometry on that.
Yeah, area. Yeah, so that's right. That's right. You guys
4 or 5 months ago
probably approved the geometry. Yes. Yep. So again, that first phase is going to be asked for by City of Middleton for 23. We're proposing potentially in an out year. Wouldn't probably be in this 23 and 24 ask, but maybe the next MPO cycle, extending that Pleasant View geometry from Old Sauk to Mineral Point. In your packet, there's also we have a couple of different project types. We have major street projects where something like Monroe Street or a Blair Street will kind of have its own budget line item. And then there's a lot of the smaller streets that you see getting reconstructed in the city, and they're what's in our we have a couple of program funds. And one of them is reconstruct streets, and pavement management is the next slide, where we do a lot of the resurfacing. And this is kind of where we lump a lot of the smaller local street projects that you'll see around the city. So we're proposing to continue that reconstruct streets and pavement management program. These are the streets we have listed proposed for 2020. Some of these were projects that we've been working on this year but didn't have funds to do, so we'd carry over to 2020.
Yep. You say reconstruct 4.1 miles. That's the
That is the 4.1 miles. Yep. So that leads into my next slide, actually, but go ahead.
I see alleys on there.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it's kind of off the topic, but is there a cost to the individual homeowner?
Yes, there is an assessment, yep.
Yeah, good. Thank you.
Yep, so some of the alleys are located there over kind of near Edgewood, Edgewood area. So 4.1 miles, we have a reconstruction budget of around, I think it's around, I better look before I say it. Generally is around the area of about $8 million in GO. That gets you about 4.1 miles of reconstruct, which is not a ton. Reconstruct projects are very expensive. You're taking out the entire base of the street, doing a lot of the utilities, all the curb, a lot of the sidewalk, usually all the crosswalk ramps. So you don't get a lot of bang for your buck in the reconstruct streets, which is why our next program, the pavement management program, is so important to us. We have a similar GO borrowing limit of around 8 to 10 million usually. But you can see we can do with that, we can chip seal 50 to 70 miles of street with that kind of money, crack seal 50 to 100 miles, and we're planning to resurface another 6.2 miles of street as well. So with this chip sealing, and crack sealing, we can do a lot more mileage and save the pavement life for a number of years before you have to get to that reconstruct program limits where you can see we can't do a whole lot of projects a year. So this is critical in our program, the chip sealing and crack sealing, to hold that pavement together and so that we can limit the streets that need to be reconstructed. Typically, on our pavement ratings, a street that's like a 3 or 4, 5 out of 10 needs to be reconstructed. Usually the base is shot at that point, the curb is shot, or if there is even curb. A street that's like a 6 or a 7, we can get by with a resurface or a chip seal and keep it in the 7 and 8 range for a number of years. Another program that's important in our ped bike budget is the bikeways program. We do a lot of resurfacing and smaller path projects, so not your new Garver or Autumn Ridge paths, but more like resurfacing four to five miles of bike path that is existing. We also look at some smaller bike projects as well that can be funded with this program. In the past, we've done some of the Demitral work with this program. This year, we're doing some work on the Portage Road path and a bridge in East Lawn Platte. Next year, or perhaps even later this year, we'll look at Southwest path resurfacing, depending on how the bids come in and what money is left in this program. But generally, we try to keep the paths above a rating of 5 in the entire city. So important program for us. Sidewalk program is another program where you see a lot of sidewalk repairs in a certain area. We go through the city once every 10 years and inspect the sidewalk in at least 2 districts a year to see if there's any trip hazards, any drainage issues, that sort of thing, and then we do those repairs and assess the property owners. So in 2019, we have Alder McKinney, Moreland, and Skidmore's, so far west side. 2020 plans is downtown Alder Revere and Reddy, and out in 2021, Evers and Carter. So those are kind of the schedule over the next few years.
You try to get to each district once every 10 years?
That's correct, yep.
And that's in addition to a report that all of a sudden the tree bumped up. Those will get done?
Yes.
Okay.
Yep. Yep, so these are the ones kind of initiated by us. Yep. This is a new program, safety program, that we've been working with Yang and Tom's staff with. They've been doing a lot of work. I think probably presented to you the crash reports and Vision Zero stuff. Yep. I have proposed in here, and we're kind of in our infancy with this program, but a set aside dollar amount to help with some of those projects to try to reduce crashes. So that's a new program that we're proposing to the mayor this year.
This will be city GO funds.
That's correct. Yep.
In addition, with federal safety projects?
Yes, if we apply for, like, HSIP funds or something, that would probably go in here.
Yeah, right. Yeah, and this actually idea, a lot of those came from this valley, actually.
Yeah.
Thank you for that.
Yeah, we had a review of the crash report, and one of the things we asked was, well, it's great to see these numbers, but what do you do with it?
Right.
So they've been spending a lot of time working on that, and they're going to come back to us with some recommendations. So, yeah, it was a good program. Mm-hmm.
Great. Lastly, I just kind of usually summarize with a kind of state of our streets. We have, as I mentioned, we rate the streets every other year and keep track of their ratings and try to stay ahead of our goals. For local streets, so these are the smaller, more residential streets, we have a goal of trying to keep less than 30 of total miles of local streets at or below a condition 5. And right now we're meeting that goal. We're at 25.9%, so pretty steady. We've been chugging away with our reconstruct and pavement management program to keep these conditions steady. Moving collector streets, we have a goal of trying to keep 20% of total miles at or below 5, and we've been kind of hovering around a little above the goal with the collector streets. And again, we use these stats to try to help us pick the projects in the reconstruct and pavement management program. So right now we're just a little bit above our
goal.
What's
an example of
collector street? Let's see. Maybe like a Seago?
Yes, and Baldwin, for example. Okay. And, you know, near Monroe Street, Grant Street.
Grant Street, yeah.
Okay.
So not quite your university avenues and not quite your you know, local streets. It's kind of in between.
Would it be like Gilbert?
Yep.
Yes.
Yep.
Correct, yeah.
Yep. Arterial streets, this is one where we've been having a hard time keeping up with. These are, as you can understand, our most expensive streets. We've got a number of arterials programmed here, as you saw in my previous sheets, that we think will get this more in line over the years, as long as we're not hit with terrible winters and springs and things are accelerating.
Or floods.
That's right.
It's a bad winter.
Yes, yes. So our goals, and correspondingly, since more people use these streets, our goals lower. We want less than 15% of total miles at or below 5. We're currently at 24. You see we made a little dent there last year with Monroe Street. With some of the projects we have in our TIP that you saw, we hope to make a much larger dent in that. We were meeting our goals early in this decade, but since have fallen a little behind.
So without putting you on the spot, just sure. So that I can experience it within the next 24 hours, give me a condition state for street.
Oh, I can do that perfectly. In fact, so this one, on the bottom right, you can see I put the pavement ratings of each street. So John Nolan is a 5 right now.
Okay.
Atwood is a 4.
You had one that was a 3 up there.
Absolutely. That would be Gammon. Gammon, University Avenue right now is a 4. Blair is a 3. Right now, yep.
Okay. I mean, it's good because otherwise I drive across it, and I don't. You ask me to take a marker and write it down, I wouldn't have a clue as to what you're looking at. But now I can look at it.
Okay. The system is it's called the PASER system that the UW developed. It just kind of helps you normalize everything and try to relate everything to each other.
I just think it's helpful for the public in general to say, oh, that's the difference between
good
a
point,
4 and a 5.
Maybe I should even throw some pictures up. Yeah.
Yeah, I was curious where they rank.
Usually we try not to let you guys experience a 3 or a 4. That's our goal.
Well, right.
They get pretty, you know, 3 is about, 3 is the worst you'll see in the city.
Well, yeah. I mean, Gammon in another 2 years would be gravel.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Correct. That is a low 3 right now.
A low 3. Have a goal for the pads? I noticed there wasn't a goal for the
I don't have a stated one, but we've been trying to hit all the paths that are 5 or less. So I have to work with Rob on that if that's actually our division's goal or not, but that is what we've been working towards. And now we're starting to these ratings are a little not quite as regular in the past with as far as doing it every 2 years. So we've started doing that now. So we just rated them in 2018. I think the year before that was 2015, and then before that was 2 or 3 years before that. But now we're starting in 18. We're going to start doing it every 2 years, just like the streets, so we can get a more consistent data set. We just led a project last fall to resurface a number of paths that hasn't been completed yet. So that's why our number is still rather high at 11. But we have a number of projects still planned yet this spring to try to bring that down, as well as I mentioned the Southwest path that we'd like to get at with that bikeways program. And that will, between those two resurfacings, we'll get at all the fives and below. So over in the next 2 years, we should be back. That number should be down low again. So that was kind of a, believe it or not, an abbreviated version of my usual presentation. How do you get info? You can always contact us, our office, and we love to hear comments on the projects, and if we're, you know, kind of moving in the right direction, what are people's priorities? Again, as I mentioned, this helps shape our budget request in May to the mayor. And if you guys have any comments or project suggestions, just let me know, either here or if you hear stuff from your folks, just, you can always email or call me.
The question, I guess, is for Tao and for Chris, is the sidewalks,
yeah,
the gaps.
Sure.
Do you work together, or who has the lead, or?
Yeah, we do work together.
Who is looking at gaps?
Engineering is kind of lead agency, kind of implementing that for gaps.
Yeah, and we input,
you know, where we should fix the gaps, things like that.
So that kind of comes into some of the projects we select, like for reconstructs or in that sidewalk program. We also do a number of usually like three or four little gaps that are missing. I didn't mention those, but that's usually part of that sidewalk program as well.
That's when you take a closer look.
Yep.
For that district that you're in, to see if there is gaps.
Actually, we'll do citywide if there's some known gaps that we want to hit.
People are starting.
We'll do like three or four projects a year with that sidewalk program.
Okay.
Anywhere in the city. Yep.
Okay.
Other comments?
Thanks, Chris.
Hey, yeah, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay. Next, I don't think we have any crossover members here,
no,
so we always get copies of the minutes from the policy board, and you know, you can go out and print off the agendas and see the material that are covered. So we'll schedule that for our next meeting. And Grant is, at this point, our only crossover member, so we'll ask him to keep us posted. Anything else on that item? Okay. Gary, did you want to give us an update from
the... Yeah, the subcommittee met this Monday to talk about edits and corrections. And I think we're to the point, after those are compiled into a printed form, to bring it back to this commission for their review and comments. And then hopefully, you know, and then we'll have a final subcommittee meeting and to take in that information and any final edits and maybe vote out the handbook and then bring it here for the commission to review and vote on.
Mm-hmm.
Is that, did I recall it correctly?
Yes, absolutely. And I think along with the review of the handbook is also discussion about what could be posted on the new Transportation Commission website that we're in the process of putting together, as well as what can be included in the training that's being put together as well. So more to follow there.
Yeah.
I want to thank Ann, Gary, and Audra Campbell for, you know, the good work on the handbook. Also want to thank you, John String from attorney office. Has
very important.
Yeah.
Part of the whole process.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah. And it's a learning tool and an education tool, and it makes us better commissioners to have something like this, I think.
Yeah. No, I'm really looking forward to it. I think it's going to be great. And I know Alder Kemble was also excited about having it as maybe a template for some other boards, committees, and commissions, in terms of what can be done.
Sure.
So the only other thing that we have here before we get into announcements and future agenda items is scheduling our second tour.
We had one tour already, which was the inside tour because it was really cold outside. And now, Yang, we're looking to do something that's more outside. But we needed to have warmer weather in order to do that. So was hoping for a little bit broader group here to try and come up with dates. So I don't know if we want to maybe have Patrick, you know, try and...
Little pool up or something there.
Yeah. Patrick is going to be gone for 2 weeks.
Yeah.
So maybe us and help.
Okay.
For that. Yeah, so the rough plan right now, the preliminary plan is to bring our members to a parking garage.
Mm-hmm.
And look at the equipment, the operations, and the design of the parking infrastructure, and then we'll find some nearby traffic infrastructure, for example, traffic signals. You know, how the controllers controls the signals, assign the time, make it work and make things more efficiently. And we can maybe show some of the streetlights infrastructure as well, maybe some fiber optic infrastructure. So that's a plan for now, but we're open to any suggestions from the body.
So I guess the question was, is during the day okay, or do we need to have it in the evening? Summertime, starting it at 5 is okay because it's light later.
Okay for me.
I mean, day works.
James Cruz, though, will probably be available at.
In the evening. It's tougher in the evening, yeah.
Generally speaking, daytime will be better for staffing purpose.
Okay.
But, if the nighttime works better for the commission, we can think about that as well.
Yeah. I guess I'm thinking afternoon might be the best, and maybe we could try some times and see. Do you think 2 hours would be good, Yang? Or?
I would think so, yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. All right. So we'll work on that. Mm-hmm. Announcements. There's a BRT public meeting number 2 on Tuesday, May 14th from 6 to 7:30. And I think they plan to hopefully, if you guys could just double check, hopefully they'll post that there might potentially be a quorum of the Transportation Commission and maybe the Transportation Policy and Planning Board as well so that we could all plan to go there if we'd like. We wouldn't have to worry about it. It is at the Madison Senior Center, 330 West Mifflin.
Mm-hmm.
So from 6 to 7:30. So Mick had sent this out. Could you maybe just ask Mick to flip this to everybody on the commission? Maybe flip that email to everybody on the commission.
That's for the BRT meeting?
Yes. I think I had asked to be on the information list for BRT, which is why I got it. Okay. So maybe Mick could just forward that. To everybody on the commission. And I talked to Gary and Ken already about their appointments are coming up in June. So if you're interested, talk to the mayor's office or somebody from the mayor's office may be talking to you. Or maybe Yang might be giving you a call as well.
My shoulder hurts.
So we have a formal work plan that is still a work in process. So if you haven't seen it yet, this is a product that Yang worked on that is really excellent way to organize our work. Does anybody have any other agenda items that aren't on the work plan or that have come up that we think should be considered? I think Grant mentioned something earlier that I took a note on. So take a look at the work plan again. Each and every meeting will have the work plan attached. What we're looking in terms of people asked what's coming up. So the next meeting we would have our quarterly reports from the police department, transit and parking. We'd have a crossover report. It sounds like we'll have a discussion only meeting with Metro on the service changes and ask, is it Tariq, am I saying his name correctly, from the mayor's office? Tariq. I'm very bad with names. It's my worst thing ever. So we asked Tariq.
They said you're fired.
No.
Okay. Being chair is a lot of work, so maybe I wouldn't.
We'll just fill on the floor.
So he's going to come and talk with us about that as well. We'll have a crossover report, and we'll also have the handbook
possibly.
Yep.
To talk about.
Yep.
And then the May 22nd meeting will have the actual approval of the Metro changes, a B-cycle update. We talked about maybe having the toolkit, but we also talked about maybe waiting till we have new all the members on board before we do that.
Yeah.
How about that? Yeah.
And just, I will not be here on the May 22nd meeting.
Oh, you won't?
For sure.
Okay.
In California.
Okay, so Bill, not here May 22nd.
And I'm not here on the one before.
So you're not here on the 8th, Ken? Okay.
Right.
That's very important with our vacancies right now and with Jessica just having her baby. Okay. The toolkit of options for traffic safety, Mike, is something that Yang's group is working on. That's going to be really awesome. So we want to have as many people available as possible for that particular meeting. So, okay, any other agenda items? Okay, then.
Move to adjourn.
All right. Is there a second?
Sure. I just want to thank both Ann and also Drew. We had a full agenda, and you two really did a great job.
Okay.
I mean, Chris also did a great job, but you both had to be pretty flexible as far as doing it.
Thank you. I was worried.
Yeah.
Thanks, everybody.